Hey, this is Two Fools Podcast. I'm David the Head, and joining me today is a new guest.
Hi, I'm Roger Broom. I've got a history of, I've been in a couple movies, been in some different things. I was on a YouTube video for a little while, and I don't know, just come to chat and see what happens.
Right. Roger and I are also on DenziCaster, in case you have any idea what we're talking about, and if not, there might be a link, who knows. I have to see if I can figure out how to operate a damn computer.
Good luck.
Yeah. So our main focus for today is probably going to be talking about some of Game of Thrones. Now, if you've listened to any of the podcasts before, we don't care about spoilers. So this is your warning, your only warning. The second is, much like the episode, we work a bit blue.
We do.
So, again, your warning.
Your warning, we might use foul language.
Like tookus.
Uh-oh. Watch it, Dave.
I know,
right?
I live on the edge. Thank God winter is coming.
True.
All right, so what ideas do you want to start with? We want to talk about just a general overview of what we like?
Yeah. Well, why do you think Game of Thrones has become so popular there?
Well, that one's easy. I mean, I've read the books, well, unlike you.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you like what Martin does or don't, you got to admit that it is in depth.
That's true.
Have you ever seen the YouTube show Game Theory?
Yes, off and on, yeah.
Okay, so they have extended into film theory.
Mm-hmm.
I highly suggest you go check it out. And
yeah,
two of their first 10 videos are Game of Thrones stuff.
Oh, nice.
Talking about the controversy behind who Jon Snow's parents are.
Yeah.
That one I thought was good. Mm-hmm. The second one, he talks about who he thinks the Chosen One is by the prophecy that's in the story.
Yeah.
It's more in the book than it is in the show.
Yeah.
And that one was a little hit or miss in my opinion, but hey.
Yeah. I don't know. What do you think? What do you think? Why do people watch Game of Thrones?
Again, the in-depth. It's in-depth.
Story, characters, everything, and the whole package.
The whole entire, from start to end. And even the characters that are bit characters, mm-hmm, still feel...
They're still fleshed out.
They feel that way, at least. They feel involved.
Because that's as with human life, there's going to be people that you see maybe once for 5 minutes, and they'll be an interesting character, but I mean, who knows if I'll ever see him again, but they were interesting when I met them at that point.
That interesting person at the Walmart.
Yeah. Hey, he was memorable, whatever he was, whatever he did.
So inevitably, when people start talking Game of Thrones, the first questions everybody always asks is like, which house do you pledge?
It's really hard to say. I mean, a lot of them have, like, there's good pluses and minuses for every house nowadays. I mean, you could always point to the Lannister and say these are the bad guys, and these are the, like, the protagonists of the story, more or less, or the antagonists, I guess, being the villains.
Right.
And because of what they do, it drives the story along, good or bad.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing always about a good villain is you can see their point of view.
Exactly. They're working towards, like, their goal. And their goal is usually peace or some world that, like, you know, is devoid of war or something like that. Or maybe just total rule.
I think Cersei says it best when she tells Joffrey, everyone's our enemy because mm-hmm, they're not us.
Yeah.
And that's a very Lannister way of looking at things.
Us versus the world.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know...
And then you have people like her brother that are like, you know, he's more of a heroic character in, I think, the show in a lot of ways. He doesn't just...
You mean the Kingslayer?
Oh, yeah, the Kingslayer. Well, the king was a mad king.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
I think it needed to be done.
There are aspects of Jaime Lannister that are admirable.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the reasons why you may consider him a hero is he is independent of his name.
Yeah, he doesn't function like a Lannister should in the...
Right, or how you think, or how you're presented that the Lannisters think Lannister should be acting.
Yeah. I see the Lannisters as like a power family from the 80s. It's all about the capitalism and the money and the power and how far your hands reach. And,
well,
they're playing Monopoly all the time. They want more power, more property, everything, and then they want people to fall in line with their way of thinking.
It's not a bad view at all.
And the only VIPs in their eyes are their family. Even Tyrion, even though he's like, you know, the black sheep of the family, he's still a Lannister, and they still look out for him, at least somewhat.
Oh, I think... Tywin?
Yeah, Tywin Lannister.
I think Tywin is the only one who really looks and I hate to use this phrase, but looks down on Tyrion.
Yeah.
I think most of the other people in the house either don't give him much thought at all, mm-hmm. or recognize that he has some talent.
Yeah.
Other than whoring and drinking.
Because I think a lot of them blame him for the mother's death. I think Tywin's wife died.
Tywin blames him
because the mother died giving birth to Tyrion. And then Tyrion being, you know, different from everybody else.
And like he tells Jon Snow, all dwarves are bastards in the eyes of their father.
Yeah.
So and I brought up a little list of some houses. So let's see, got House Baratheon, Bolton, Florent, Lannister, Martell, Redwine, Stark, Umber, Targaryen, and Tully.
Yep.
And Greyjoy was one.
Yeah.
This little list was now going realistically about probably appearances.
Yeah.
When I started watching the show, much like probably everyone else, I really went to House Stark.
Yeah.
I mean,
because they're the heroes, more or less, in the first season, the first time you see them.
They really are noble people.
They don't do a lot of evil just straight out for just like the Lannisters.
They may be hard because, as we learned, they are steeped in the old ways.
Yeah.
And there are things that they do or would do that I would find offensive.
Mm-hmm.
But the trick in my mind is, you know what the Starks are going to find offensive. And you know what their punishments are.
Yeah. They outline the rules very strictly and very clearly to everybody in the surrounding area. And they rule the North at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, I mean, they are the Warden of the North. And there were times when the Starks were the King of the North.
Yep.
So that's a lot of people don't seem to realize is that they are the Seven Kingdoms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And House Baratheon becoming the new Empire. Was he an emperor, or was he just a king?
He was a king.
King of the Seven?
Yeah, he was a king that sat on the Iron Throne.
The Iron Throne, right.
Yeah. And then the throne is in, I think, King's Landing, and then that's where you rule as the capital city of everywhere, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, you communicate via raven or just messenger or something like that, but then this is the olden days. It's going to take, like, weeks to come back.
Well, the way they use our ravens in that game cracks me up.
Yeah.
Our game, in that show? Setting, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just...
Raven's like the fastest way of communicating, more or less.
I mean, I get that ravens are... I mean, we used carrion pigeons a long time ago and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there seems to be an almost mystical aspect of the ravens.
Oh, yeah. They're like one of the permanents in the world. And there's not a lot of permanents. Like, life and death.
Yeah.
It can just come out of nowhere.
Well, you know, that's another good example of what's going on in the show and in the movies and stuff. I'm bringing up a map. I'm trying to.
Mm-hmm.
See, you have
The wall Winterfell at the very top, obviously, and then you have Winterfell under that.
So this is showing the main cities in the zones, but it don't give the name of the zones.
Yeah.
I kind of like the Greyjoys nowadays.
I like the Greyjoys, too.
We don't see in the show very good examples, but I like to go to the
You got Theon Greyjoy, and then I think you see his father and see his sister later on. And they're just like, Theon, what have you been doing? Why are you doing this? You're the black sheep of the family, and get out there and do something interesting.
Here we are. I like to look at the wikis.
Yeah.
And read some of the behind-the-scenes stuff. So you got the North, the mm-hmm. Vale of Arryn, the Riverlands,
mm-hmm.
the Westerlands, the Iron Islands, the Crownlands, the Stormlands. That's where the Baratheons are from.
Yep.
The Reach and Dorne.
Yep.
And so in the show currently, they're doing a lot of stuff with Dorne.
Yep. Dorne is more or less a Spain kind of.
It is.
It's like an equivalent of their world. And it's like pretty much, yeah, a lot of stuff been happening lately. The fight between the Mountain and the Dornish Prince here lately, the Viper.
In the fourth season. Yeah, that was a big one.
Oh, yeah.
Oberon
Martell.
Wasn't it Oberon?
Yep. And he was really cool, and I think the guy that they found like an unknown actor to play him.
Yeah.
And he kind of like I think he came to the role like, I'm going to approach this kind of like an Inigo Montoya from The Princess Bride, and that's probably
you killed my sister, now prepare to die.
Pretty much, yeah. That's kind of how he approached the role. But I thought he did an excellent job on the show, though.
Well, I mean the books have been popular. I mean, the first one came out in 1996, and the last one came out in 2011.
Yeah. And he's working on one now. He's working on two more.
This TV show
mm-hmm.
is exploded. I mean, just ridiculous.
I think it's a lot of what everybody likes to see. I mean, there's the sex scenes. Those are great. Nudity. Woohoo.
Well, that makes the news. That catches your eye.
Yeah. That's like the pull on a commercial to bring you in.
Right.
And then you got the violence and you have the plotting against other people and stuff like that. And you get the character development in the show is you get to know all the characters and their ups and downs and everything, which I think pulls you in. And you get invested in these characters.
Well, do you have a favorite?
My favorite character?
Yeah.
Probably Arya Stark.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of her, too. I mean, obviously Ned was my favorite.
Yeah. But then Sean Bean, you know Sean Bean's going to just buy
it. I totally
didn't.
I totally didn't.
Yeah.
I really was.
You thought he'd like be the...
I thought he was going to make it.
You thought he'd be the hero through the whole series?
No, I didn't think he'd be the hero through the whole series, mm-hmm. but when the scene where Varys is like, you know, all you have to do is bend the knee, you think my honor's that important? Well, what about the lives of your children?
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun!
Yeah, because Varys is almost always right about everything. And a lot of people look at Varys and he's like, oh, he's a stupid, fat, bald man. But no, he is. He has got his finger on the pulse of Westeros everywhere. He has the spider has his, like, webbing everywhere, in every city, and every, like, climate.
Oh my god, look at that. 7.14 million U.S. viewers.
Wow. On the Dance of Dragons, yeah.
In the last episode, yep.
Yep.
7.14. Not the highest. They have a 7.2 last season.
Mm-hmm. It was a pretty awesome episode. You need to catch it. David has not seen all up to date.
Yeah, I got up to episode 8. I didn't get to episode 9. And then, you know, number 10's coming out.
Yep.
But the funny thing is just by the title of Mother's Mercy, mm-hmm. I know what's going to happen in that episode.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be Queen Cersei's walk.
Oh yeah, what the like the trial and everything?
Or have they already done the walk?
If they did
the walk, you'd know. If
I don't think so.
Okay, then that when you watch when this show hits there, mm-hmm. you're gonna be all like, okay, I know what he meant.
Yeah,
and if it ain't in there, I'm wrong. But
yeah. last time I saw Cersei or any of the Tyrells, they're all like in
sitting in the jail,
Christian prison.
Yeah. Well.
I guess I wouldn't call it that. But
No,
it's more of an Inquisition, really.
Yes, and the Inquisition came from...
The Inquisition, like a religious order that that's not governed by the government, that does their own thing.
Church got power from Cersei's manipulation of, or wanting to manipulate a situation.
Yeah, because she wanted to go against Marjorie
Tyrell,
right. get her thrown in jail, but then it kind of blew up in her face. When the guy from Pirates of the Caribbean showed up and he's like the Sparrow or whatever he is. I don't know
about the Pirates of the Caribbean.
The older guy.
I know who you're talking about. He is the High Sparrow.
Yeah, he was Elizabeth's dad in Pirates
really?
Of the Caribbean. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the point of reference I use.
Nice.
Because that's the most popular thing I've seen him in lately.
That's funny. I didn't realize it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, I guess, you know, not wearing a powdered English wig and frou-frou clothing makes it hard for him.
As far as favorite characters, though, my number one favorite is probably Arya Stark, because I have a feeling of where she's going and stuff like what she's doing and stuff like that, and I like the hard-headed and strong will of, like, that character. And my second favorite is probably Tyrion Lannister. I really like Tyrion, and I like his ability to sit back with whomever he's with and just, like, drink wine and, like... relate, I suppose.
I enjoy Tyrion's character, but he's like such the fan favorite that I kind of stay away from saying he's a favorite.
Yeah.
I really like Jorah
Mormont.
Mormont.
Yeah.
I really like him this season.
He's got that determination, doesn't
I've
he?
I've enjoyed his character in the past,
mm-hmm.
but he's cleaning his act up. And he's doing everything now for the right reason, it feels like.
He feels like he's not the person that Daenerys wants, but he's the person Daenerys needs to steer her.
I'm not the knight you want, but I'm the knight you need.
Pretty much, yeah. To, like, steer her on, like, a certain path, you know. And he has been protecting her ever since the...
You just made Jorah the bear man.
Kinda, yeah.
Because his family sigil's the bear.
Yeah. Because he's been protecting her since, like, Khal Drogo and, like, the whole right there.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been fighting for her to... He wants to see her queen. Of, like, everything. So, I mean, I like that determination in him.
I'm so glad that the stuff with Joffrey and, to a lesser extent, Robin of mm-hmm. of the Eyrie.
Uh-huh.
Do you know who I'm talking about?
I believe so, yeah.
The little weird kid up at the Sky Door.
Yeah, uh-huh.
It's funny, as much as most people hate the Boltons for betraying... The Starks.
Yeah.
Roose Bolton says something very wise in the book. He might say it in the show. I haven't heard it. But he's like, you know, his wife is currently pregnant.
Yes.
And Ramsay gives real nervous about it.
He takes Ramsay as his son because he doesn't have a son currently, and Ramsay's still a bastard technically.
Well,
his,
no, he's been legitimized.
He's been legitimized, but still, if she has a son, then
but
he'd
carries that stigma.
Yeah,
and Roose pretty much tells him in the book, don't worry about it. You're the heir.
Yeah,
because I'm old.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to live much longer.
Yeah.
And God's protect us from a child lord in charge, you know?
That's true.
And you look at Joffrey, you look at, like I said, Robin, and even to a lesser extent, Tommen.
Yeah.
I'm glad that they aged the characters,
because
Tommen was really young in the books.
Yeah.
Because Joffrey was like 14 or 15, and Tommen was like 8.
Yeah. What do you think of Ramsay Bolt, Ramsay Snow Bolton now? I mean, the stuff he's been like doing lately.
Well, I knew he was
pretty rough.
I knew he was a skeezy, deranged bastard from the book.
Oh yeah, he's
it's interesting to see him differ because the TV show is differing a bit.
Yeah, is he not as bad in the TV show?
Oh no, he's just as bad.
Just as bad.
They're just showing him being just as bad in different ways.
Yeah.
Sansa disappears kind of from the books.
Uh-huh.
You know where she's at. They just don't go back to her. Does that make sense?
Really? What, Littlefinger, like, drops her off at the Bolton camp or something
No.
Or what?
No.
Or nothing like that happens?
She stays in the Eyrie.
Oh, okay.
And nobody really knows that she's a Stark, I think. It's been a while since I read the book.
Mm-hmm.
Or the very few people who do know she's a Stark
hides
it, and she stays as, I think her character's name was Alyssa Stone.
Yeah.
The bastard child of
somebody.
Peter? Yeah. No, of Littlefinger.
Yeah.
And she kind of stays as the cousin slash nanny slash playmate of Robin. Because remember, Robin's really young at this time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's too early to really start, you know.
Oh, okay. I like that. I like that kind of better than they do in the show. Because, like, he takes her.
Right.
In the show, he takes her to the Boltons pretty quickly and uses her as a bargaining chip.
I don't remember if it's Littlefinger or an agent of the Lannisters, but, Sansa has a friend named, I think Jenny Poole was her name.
Mm-hmm.
And they take her back to Winterfell and marry her to Ramsay as Sansa Stark.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's neat.
And then he, you know, abuses and manipulates and whatever.
Of course.
In the books, to my knowledge, it gets to... He doesn't get his comeuppance yet. It, Stannis is on the way to Winterfell when the story ends.
Yeah. It's gotten a little bit farther in the show right now.
I gotta be honest with you. If the Night's Watch could marry, they would be the group I'd be all in.
Yeah.
I'd be like all in. All my chips.
I don't like the whole not marry thing. I guess it takes away from duty, but I mean everybody up there is going to like die out, I guess. I guess that there it's a punishment and then your family name will die out.
Well, in the beginning, it wasn't a punishment. It was a self-sacrifice. It was a...
sacrifice for the greater good.
Right, and it was...
protecting against the whatever.
An honorable order. It was a proudful thing.
Yeah. Now it just seems like a punishment, it feels like.
It's kind of funny, in the Middle Ages, nobles who had money, third or fourth child went to the church.
Yeah.
And became monks. You know what I mean? It was
It
was a sign of wealth and power
and
to have
good faith, I guess.
Yeah, and that. Well, you know.
Yeah.
Can't buy your way into heaven, but if I give him a son, you know,
then I get a VIP seat.
Well, the other thing is you don't have to deal with arguing over inheritance because in 90% of European culture, it always goes to the firstborn son.
Yeah.
You know, you marry your daughters off.
Yeah. Hopefully to a good, strong family or whatever.
Yeah, or for a political reason. Or,
You
know, if the daughters are lucky, you let them make their own choice, which was very rare.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't realize is that a lot of the girls had, ladies, whatever, had their own dowry. And in many of the European cultures, they were in charge of their own dowry.
Yeah, like if you got a girl, you would get a cow, too, and some other stuff, like, because you got the girl.
Right,
a prize.
Right. It just depends on some of them. You gave a dowry to the family, and some the woman came with her own dowry.
Yeah.
And if she was to leave the union through a rare divorce or the death of a spouse, she took her dowry with her.
I feel like that still happens nowadays. Some points.
Well, except people make their own choices, and
yeah,
definitely when they go through the divorce, they take their shit.
Oh yeah, they take a good helping.
and a lot of things is, okay, so you're watching this thing with the wildlings.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, I didn't see episode 9, so I don't know if the wildlings appear that much in that. They were big time in episode 8.
Off and on, pretty much.
So, in the books, the wildlings join the Brotherhood.
Yeah.
They're not going to swear any oaths. They're not going to wear black. They're going to continue being who they are, but they're allied with.
Yeah.
And he lets a lot of them through to farm. There's land behind the wall.
Yeah, there's land that they're going to give them if they fight. It's
called Brandon's Gift. Brandon Stark, not the boy, but the namesake ancestor.
Yeah.
It's farmland that the Night's Watch don't use anymore because they don't have enough people to do it.
And the wildlings could sit out there
and
settle down and populace it, you know.
And they open up. See, a lot of things we don't know about the TV show, most people don't, is there's like 20-something castles along the Great Wall.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Night's Watch is fielding two or three of them.
Yeah.
They have a port city on the east end of the wall, then Central Castle Black, and I think there's a third one, but I don't remember.
Yeah, I think they went, that's the, how they got the wildlings to Castle Black. They went around with boats.
Right. Because you remember during the one scene, he tries to send... the guy who used to be a gold cloak. I can't remember his
red-haired
name.
Red-haired guy?
Slint, S-L-Y-N-T.
I think so, yeah.
I think he was bald. But he was the one who was from King's Landing, got knighted, and then took the black. Because, you know, it was take the black or die. And he was going to send him to be lord of one of the castles.
Oh, okay, yeah.
He was all like, I'm not going to do it. And then he ended up losing his head over it.
Huh. Wow.
I like everything about the watch, except, you know, they can't make their own more. It don't make any sense to me. Originally, I get it, but it's been 8,000 years.
Yeah.
Might be time to modify your rules a little.
You're going to have, like, a really weak army of old men up there eventually to try and protect, unless you just keep fulfilling the watch, keep filling Castle Black with the souls.
Criminals.
And, yeah, criminals are pretty much like the army. You're enlisted. You don't have, like, a place in the world, so they'll just send you off and make you do a job that you don't want to do, and you're probably not going to do it well. And that's who's protecting us from what's coming up from the north.
Well, to be fair, for the last 8,000 years, nothing's been coming from the north except wildlings, and everyone south of the north couldn't care less.
That's true.
And that's another thing a lot of people don't realize, is that the north is about the same size as the rest of the fucking country.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, like, barren land out
there.
Barren wasteland.
Wilderness.
And you see some, like, wildlings doing some strange stuff, and you're gonna be like, oh my god, we got, like, monsters and stuff out here.
Speaking of Stannis, what's your take on Stannis?
I like Stannis Baratheon. I like the determination of he wants to be, he knows he's the one king and stuff like that. Do you remember the kid? Do you remember the kid that they had in the last season? They took some of his blood.
Gendry?
Yeah, Gendry, I think. And they took his blood and sent him off in a rowboat, and he just kept rowing, and we haven't seen him since.
I don't think you see him in the book either.
I want to see if he comes back, because he's technically the Baratheon heir, isn't he?
He's a bastard, so no.
Oh, okay.
Technically, Robert Baratheon would have no legitimate children.
Yeah.
Every one of his children would be bastards.
Oh, okay.
Because the three children people think are Baratheons are not his children.
Yeah.
They're Jaime and Cersei's.
Yeah.
By the law of the land and the way it stands now, Stannis is technically the king.
Yeah.
He is... If the truth of Tommen came out, he would be the king.
Yeah. But he's waging war. Pretty much he left Castle Black and he's going towards the Boltons. And the Boltons, I mean, have a highly fortified castle, and he's going at them through the snow. And that's not what I would do, I don't think.
The one big problem with the Boltons is that they don't have a lot of allies in the north.
Yeah.
A lot of the big families in the north were blood related to the Starks.
Yeah.
Even if it was distant related.
Yeah, so they'd pick Stark over Bolton if there was a choice.
I mean, realistically, one of the family's name is Karstarks.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't get much more related than my name is in your name.
That's true.
So, I think Stannis, if he wages the war on Winterfell and doesn't die in the damn snow, and re-puts, let's say, Sansa, because she's there in the TV show.
She's the technical,
puts her back as the wardeness of the North, I think Stannis would end up getting support from the North.
Yeah.
And once he has a solidified spot to work out of...
Because I think he and Jon Snow are on good terms right now. I mean...
Well, Jon is a man of the Watch.
Yeah.
And he's pretty much said, the rules of the Watch, we don't get involved.
Yeah. But he and Stannis are on good terms, and Stannis is like, fine, thanks for holding our guys, and we're going to see what we can do here, and I don't know.
Was there anyone, any person, or any ideas you wanted to look into?
I think it's there's a lot. I've seen the way that the League of the Black pretty much don't like wildlings, and then they're going to invite a bunch of them to Castle Black, and you have people there that like wildlings killed their whole family.
Right.
And I'm anxious to see what happens there if they actually start to sabotage the relationship between Castle Black and the wildlings.
I won't tell you what happens in the book, then I'll keep that to myself.
Yeah, because it sounds like there's going to be friction there, and they're just going to have like just problems inborn in there, I guess. And I love that the wildlings have a giant.
Yeah, he does really show up in the book as well.
I think they had three giants when they attacked Castle Black the first time.
I know at least one.
I think two of them died, and the third one is the one that's left.
I was about to say, at least one, because I know at least one killed the people in the tunnel, but the people in the tunnel got him back.
Yeah, they blew it up. They blew up, yeah.
Getting out of the north, is there anyone else you want to touch on?
Let me see.
So you brought up... Governor Swan.
Yeah.
Did you know that the prince in charge of Dorne used to be Dr. Julian Bashir on Deep Space Nine?
Oh, yeah, really? I didn't know that.
He goes by different names depending on the decade he's acting.
Mm-hmm.
I know him, I think it's Alexander Siddig.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was kind of like his American name.
Mm-hmm.
I remember seeing him as one of the angels in... they did the greatest story ever told kind of remake, the birth of Christ and all that.
Yeah.
And he was one of the angels.
Oh, that's neat.
Kingdom of Heaven.
He
was in that. And I think in each one of these reference, the reason I'm bringing up these movies is I think in each one they present his name as something different.
Oh, nice.
Each time going more traditional from where he's from.
Yeah.
Or where his ancestry's from.
Who would you say your favorite characters are, and why are they your favorite characters? Why do they resonate with you?
Well, Arya, I think, like what you said, she's hard-headed, she's interesting, she's fun, you want to root for her. She's the underdog who...
She's always the underdog for most of the things she gets into.
And actually wins every once in a while.
Yeah.
Which, Game of Thrones,
I love her
rare.
I love her and the Hound together, and I love...
The weirdest buddy cop movie ever.
Yeah, I know, but they worked well together, and they kind of taught each other things.
Yeah, eventually they did.
Yeah. And then what was her name that fought the Hound?
Brienne of Tarth.
Brienne of Tarth. She's probably my third favorite character. I love how she swore an oath to someone who's dead and she's still fulfilling the oath.
Well, to get into that character a little bit, if Brienne doesn't hold to her concepts of honor, she's got to realize she's a failure.
Yeah. That's like the driving force of her life, is just to make sure she keeps her promise.
Right. And unfortunately, she would probably feel like she's a failure because she's a woman, because that's what people always tell her,
mm-hmm.
when realistically, no knight could do what she does.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, she's good.
Shadow monster killed your king.
Yeah.
No one else stopped it either.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't think she had the means to stop it.
An entire two families... betrayed the Starks.
Mm-hmm.
Very few people lived from the Red Wedding.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm.
If
you lived, if you weren't there,
right?
Or they didn't know you were there.
So how can she hold herself
so
rigidly?
Exactly.
When no one else, had it been a man, no one would have said another damn word.
Yep.
But because she's a woman, and they treat her that bad for the reason to begin with,
and she's been treated bad like when she was younger too.
Yeah,
they tried to just marry her off. And the guys would look at her playing with a sword, and they're like, "What are you doing? You're a woman. You're supposed to be cooking and cleaning and making babies."
I think her character is a pretty interesting character. I like her.
I like the strong female character in anything that I've watched, and I like to identify with them, and I like to see the strong female character because you don't get that a lot nowadays.
I get your point.
And you like in early stuff like Joss Whedon, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. You got Alias with Jennifer Garner, and you get a strong female hero, and then you can see how they go through everything. That's why I like it.
With Sansa,
mm-hmm.
and I'll say this about the TV character, Sansa is much more redeemable than the book version.
Yeah.
See, realistically, we realize Sansa betrayed her father.
Uh-huh.
Kind of by accident, kind of through naivety,
mm-hmm.
and she pays a price for it.
Yeah.
Sansa's a strong character in her femininity.
Yeah.
So, what you're saying, I'm on board for.
Mm-hmm.
Arya is a clever character whose femininity is irrelevant because technically she's so young.
Arya is more of a personality that doesn't buy into the hype.
Right.
She'll stay back and listen and see what's going on.
I feel that way about Brienne. Mm-hmm.
Brienne of Tarth. Yes.
I think she's an interesting character and her gender is irrelevant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Cersei is a strong female character. Even if you don't like her.
Even if
her.
She's evil, yeah. Right, she's still a strong female character.
And
I don't find myself rooting for Cersei as much, but I like how she does things,
and since,
like through manipulation. Well,
and since you brought that up, let's look at the opposite side of the coin.
Yeah.
Jon Snow is a strong character whose gender is rather irrelevant.
Yeah.
Samwell Tarly is a strong character who makes a poor, quote-unquote, man.
Yeah.
You know, and his character is like the polar opposite explanation that everybody says strong female character.
Yeah.
Well, here's a weak male character.
Yeah.
Physically weak. But he's such a great character. There's more to him than nerdy sidekick.
I love this. There's an SNL sketch of Game of Thrones and like the hot couple from Game of Thrones was Samwell and his like girl because that was the only couple left alive or something at that point. And they were just like, yeah, we just like to hide when bad things happen.
That's clever. With baby Sam.
Yeah, with baby Sam.
Because we know nothing, John.
So I love Samwell. I call him Samwise because I keep forgetting his name. But he's always like the light of inspiration for Jon Snow. When everything's going sideways for Jon, you always have Samwell.
But his friendship.
I believe in you, Mr. Jon. I think you can do anything. He's his little Jimmy Cricket off to the side.
It may not be my job to take the Night Watch through the dark, dark night, but I'll carry you from... I mean...
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, you know... That you say that, we're laughing, but I never thought about that.
Yeah.
He really is the Samwise
to his Frodo.
Right.
Yeah. Because Jon Snow is against opposition being... He's now the king.
You have no idea.
He's now the head of the Night Watch, and everybody else in the Night Watch is someone older and more experienced than
Jon Snow.
Well,
maybe not everyone, but...
But not everybody, but there's a lot of people that don't think he should be the one.
Well, I mean, he literally won the election by one vote.
Pretty much, yeah. One vote. And I think that was the old fellow.
Yeah. I mean, if you wanted to break it down, it was like 40% him, 40% the next guy, and then 20% the last guy. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then Master Aemon broke the tie with one stupid vote.
Yep. And I mean, he's got some support, but I mean, you got Samwell and you got old people. And I mean,
I'm sure there's some young ones that are on Team Snow.
A lot of the young ones that's the family that's been killed by wildlings, and they're like, why are you doing this, Jon Snow? Are you insane? You know? I love the meme of Jon Snow. It just shows him like looking intently and has a subtitle, Knowing Nothing Intensifies. And I feels like that about a lot of places that he just kind of like flies by a wing in a prayer, but I think he talks with greater people than himself, like Stannis Baratheon and stuff like that.
And he picks
their brains and find out, what would you do here? What do you think I should do? And stuff like that. Because he doesn't have a lot of experience.
I was about to say, he has one skill you very rarely see in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Listening.
Yeah. Listening to great people that have done things and like taking from their experience.
Well, speaking of Snow, do you want to get in your tinfoil hat controversy time?
Oh, sure. Why not?
Have you heard the controversy of who Jon Snow's parents are?
Oh, no, I have not.
No?
Nope.
Okay. So, one thing about Jon Snow that has been said many, many times in both the book and a handful of times in the TV show is he favors Arya.
Mm-hmm.
And of all of Ned's natural-born children, Arya favors the Starks.
Mm-hmm.
All the other ones favor, I can't think of the mother's name.
Oh, Ned's wife, yeah.
Yeah, I understand. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
And her family from the Riverlands.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The auburn hair, the soft complexion, natural beauties.
I've heard other things, too, of what he could be.
So, what did you hear?
Somebody said he looks slightly Targaryen. And a lot of the and I think as such in the show, all the Targaryens have died out except for Daenerys in like the lower regions.
See, the theory is that he's not Ned's child; he's Ned's sister's child, the one who was kidnapped by a Targaryen prince.
Yeah,
and quote unquote kidnapped.
Yeah,
you know, because she was locked up in the Tower of Joy.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's actually called the Tower of Joy.
It was actually called the Tower of Joy.
Wow.
Yeah, and the whole reason Robert's battle started, Robert's rebellion, was Robert was supposed to marry Lyandra Stark.
Yeah, the sister.
And when Rhaegar Targaryen forsook.
Yeah.
When he put aside his Dornish wife.
Yeah. And he took.
Yes, the Stark took Lysandra.
Yeah.
So now Robert was angry. Remember in the first season, he's all like, "I'll kill every guy.
Let's go hunting. Yeah,
kill every Targaryen ever."
Oh yeah.
So even if Lysandra went of her own free will or didn't, you know, there's no way Robert would have looked at it any other way than she was kidnapped and raped and etc.
Yeah, because she could have gone of her own free will, but nobody would have approved it. Obviously.
The second thing is Ned finds her in a bed of her own blood.
Mm-hmm.
And her last words are, "Promise me, Ned."
Uh-huh.
Okay. Then he comes back from the war with a baby.
Huh.
Claiming, had a baby out of wedlock. And that is all he would say about it to his wife.
Hmm.
And, I mean, Ned's the kind of guy who was willing to lose his head over honor.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying?
So the possibility is Jon Snow might be half Stark, half Targaryen.
Right. That's the idea a lot of people say. She died in childbirth.
Yeah.
I personally, I'm buying it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I would double down on it, but I definitely put my chips on it.
Yeah.
And just for tin hat fun conspiracy idea, I think Daenerys is coming to the Iron Throne.
Yeah.
And I think she's going to marry her half nephew? I'm trying to think. Her brother's son. Yeah, that'd be her nephew.
Half nephew, yeah.
Well, I guess it wouldn't be a half nephew. It'd be her nephew.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because the Targaryens marry enter Mary.
Yeah.
And the series is called A Song of Fire and Ice.
Yep.
The fire is the blood of the dragon.
Yep.
And the ice is the cool mentality of the North.
Yeah.
Most people are not going to want Daenerys because she's more of the old and a female.
And the name Targaryen makes them think of the Mad King who slaughtered
and
like
most
millions.
People would never, ever, even if it came out that he was this person,
yeah.
Most people would not want Jon Snow because he is a bastard.
Yeah.
But together, they come together, and you would have, I hate to say it this way, but a power couple.
Yeah.
King William and Queen Mary.
Uh-huh.
I think, William and Mary, I think that's the way it is. The English Revolution.
Yeah,
are you familiar with any of it?
A little bit,
like
yeah.
James Cromwell and that.
Yeah,
they killed the king,
mm-hmm.
and then they tried a few years with the Parliament in charge and realized, oh, we might have made a mistake.
Yep.
So they brought back a different king, and then he died, and I don't think he had any children. So they went to his uncle because that's the way their line goes.
Yeah,
and when he died. The next oldest was a queen in Scotland, but she was Catholic, and they didn't want her.
Mm-hmm.
So they skipped over and went, hey, Queen Mary, who happened to be married, or Princess Mary, who happened to be married to a high noble in the Netherlands, William of Orange. And they're like, you want the throne? And she's like, I'll take the throne if my husband is crowned king.
Uh-huh.
And what a lot of people don't realize is, like Queen Elizabeth II, her husband isn't the king.
Yeah.
He's Prince Philip, the consort.
Yeah.
Just like before her, her father was the king. Her mother, who happened to be Elizabeth as well, was not
a queen.
The queen. Right? She was the queen mother.
Yeah.
A title, a job, as it were.
Yeah.
So, since Martin, I think, is English.
Yeah.
Definitely, Westeros is based on England.
Oh yeah, it's based on the English hierarchy.
And the Western European world.
Yeah.
I could easily see it happen.
Yeah.
I'm not putting all my chips on that bet, but I would put a few on there just to cover the spread.
Well, now that Tyrion's going to help Daenerys, I think she's going to get, like, a lot of what she was looking for. Because she's kind of been going around she's the chainbreaker, she's like the freedom fighter, and she's been doing a lot of good things, but she hasn't made making strides towards King's Landing.
She did get very mired down in the mess that's going on in the country she's in.
And I've seen like a meme on Facebook. It showed actually the Unsullied on the in the books. they're like the Spartans from 300.
Yes.
In the show, they're like stormtroopers. They cannot win for losing. On a lot of places. They did good with taking the city of Marine, I think, more or less. But once the fight, they're fighting the Sons of the Hydra, I think is
the Sons of the Harpy.
The Sons of the Harpy. Yeah. It's going to...
No,
it's,
you've got a
they're
point.
More or less losing.
But I wouldn't go so far down the thread as stormtroopers.
Yeah, that's what the memes showed.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Really, I mean, that's a little too harsh.
Yeah.
Unsullied are like the Spartans. They are engines of war.
Pretty much, yeah.
Unfortunately, what's going on in the city is not a war.
Yeah.
It's guerrilla terrorism.
It's covert warfare. It's like wet work, black ops kind of stuff.
Right.
It's like small strikes on certain areas, pretty much.
There it is, prophecy. I'm looking up the prophecy so that we can talk about it real quick, because I don't know it directly, and I think you might like it. Boom, boom, boom.
I love that Daenerys is Sarah Connor in the new Terminator Genesis. And they're rewriting the entire Terminator
actress.
Script. Yeah,
I'm interested
Amelia
seeing
Clark.
That. I am interested in seeing that.
And it's like they're going back and redoing the entire Terminator script from like the beginning, where the Terminator raises Sarah Connor. Where it doesn't
really?
It doesn't destroy itself after Terminator 2 or whatever. How it always has a prime directive of self-destruction because, you know, something might happen in the future. I don't think this one did not self-destruct.
Well,
self-terminate, rather.
The fun thing that a lot of people don't realize about the Terminator is every Terminator is technically changing the Terminator history.
Yeah.
I mean...
Well, the last one didn't so much because it was in
Judgment
the
Day was supposed to be August 29th...
1998,
I want to say. 1999 or 09, 2009, I forget which.
I think it was...
The joke was August 29th is Michael Jackson's birthday.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. And one of the novelizations, it was like his 40th or 50th birthday. Mm-hmm. He's born in 59, same year as my mother.
Uh-huh.
That's why I remember. Okay, August 29th is my brother's birthday. Mm-hmm. 1959 is my mother's birth year.
Yeah.
So the fact that it was also and Michael Jackson and Judgment Day, wow. Those numbers, I remember them.
Huh, neat.
So that's part of... Oh.
Wrong button.
Yeah, I didn't like that. I was all like, no, I don't like you. I can't find it.
Just tell me about it.
Okay, so there's supposed to be this prophecy that a person born during salt and storm under the Red Messenger would be the one who saves the people from the long winter, the long night.
Yeah.
8,000 years ago, a man rose up and crafted a sword that still exists in the world. It's called Lightbringer.
Yeah.
And used it to slay the monsters to the north.
Yeah.
The Great North.
Yep.
He had to quench the sword in the heart of his beloved. Yeah. Huh. I don't know if it's just part of the story or anywho. Yeah. And the idea is that the only person who's going to be able to save is the person born under this thing.
Yeah.
Well, we know that Daenerys was born on a sea side,
yeah.
During a storm. Mm-hmm. It's why they call her Daenerys Stormborn. Born, right.
Yep.
The red comet was flying overhead when she walked, or when everyone awoke and found her living in the pyre of Khal Drogo.
Yeah.
In the book, she's bald. That's the only difference between the book and the movie.
Oh, nice.
Her hair burned. Yeah. That was it. So, that's almost a rebirth under the Red Comet. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Blood of dragons, all that jazz. The other contingent is Jon Snow himself.
And his Valyrian steel sword.
And his Valyrian steel sword, right.
Yeah. Which we saw in the episode where he fought the White Walkers.
His weapon didn't break.
His weapon can fight a White Walker and come through it. Him and the dragon rock, which is like onyx or something like
Obsidian. Dragon glass.
Yeah, obsidian. Those are the only two things in the world that are known to destroy a White Walker.
Which is funny about obsidian, because I don't know if you ever played Minecraft.
Yeah.
It's like the hardest rock in Minecraft.
Yeah.
And a real obsidian breaks easy.
Yeah.
But it's just sharp as hell.
Mm.
And
I like the White Walker he fought kind of looked like The Witcher.
Yeah.
More or less, which is kind of neat. And I don't know, I like a lot of the whole White Walker army. Like, how they'll have a fight, and everybody died,
and then
they stand
back
up.
How awesome was that? He was all like,
He's like,
"Oh, you're getting away. You like that fight, huh?" Everybody stood the fuck up.
Yeah, he had that look. He had that look, and just kind of like rise from your grave, and they just popped back up. And he like had
was that
his
Golden
armor
Axe
back.
Or Altered Beast?
Altered Beast from Sega Genesis.
Rise from your grave.
No, no, they don't. They don't enunciate. Rise from your grave. Because it was like somebody
like
how
the hell?
I want to say it was a Japanese actor trying to do an American accent or something like that.
How do you fight an enemy who isn't afraid of dying?
Yeah.
Damn near impossible to kill anyways.
And he will take the entire of the
and the moment you
the
die,
dead,
you join his army.
The entirety of the dead will be on his side for the next fight.
Well, that's why zombie shows are always so dangerous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you have to kill them in a certain way where they don't come back. You gotta, like, I don't know if, like, White Walkers are the same as zombies. You have to, like, pierce the head or something with Valyrian steel or obsidian.
I think there's some lore in Game of Thrones about the Weirwood.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah, and then whatever happened there with Bronn and the little Stark boy, like, went off into the woods, like, a season or two ago, and then I think he met some old man, and then that's the last we saw of
him. You talking about...
The youngest Stark that Bronn? Can't walk?
Yeah, that's Brandon.
The one that fell out of the tower.
Yeah, it's Brandon.
Yeah, Brandon. I think Bran, or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, they call him Bran.
Him and Hodor, and I think went to the woods at some point.
And the other guy was a green seer. I can't remember their names off the top of my head.
And that whole storyline was in the last season.
Here it is, the children. We can look at the episode notes on Wikipedia.
That whole season was in the last... That whole happened in the last season, but then... Not so much after that.
Mira Reed, Stark. The Reeds.
Yeah, and the Reeds.
Yeah, Brandon Hodor.
Saved by a child of the forest.
Yep. Technically, the children of the forest are kind of like elves.
Yeah.
Sprites.
Things born of the forest, just don't only know the forest.
They were in the books. They're called the First People, because when the people come from Valyria, when they come over and land, it's the Anglican-Saxon invasion, Normandy. Just so many parallels between England real history.
Yeah,
yeah. Go ahead and say that actor's name.
Which one?
That. Giant Icelandic name right
there. Oh, Gregor the Mountain Clegane is Hypor Julius Bjornsson.
Yeah, I'll go with Bjornsson. Anything beyond that, I'm not even touching.
Yeah, he was actually at one of the wrestling pay-per-views recently.
Yeah.
Sitting next to Stephanie McMahon, like, watching.
And then, much like Fred Flintstone, he put the Stephanie McMahon up on her shoulder so she could see better.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. He's I think, a big strength trainer, trying to, like, break all the, like, strength records, like, pulling trucks and things like that, and he's broken a lot
of them.
There you go.
Davis Seaworth. Speaking of Stannis, he's one of the best characters, in my opinion.
What do you mean?
Sir Davos Seaworth.
Oh, yeah, the Onion Knight, Sir Davos. Who couldn't read until the little girl taught him how to read.
I like him a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, this show is just awesome.
It is awesome. It's got well-developed characters that you care about, which is nice. They're not just foils or like flat characters.
So should dip your head into the books, man.
Yeah, I know.
So I covered what I think's going to happen. Your turn. What do you think the final end story of this is going to be?
The end story? I've heard some of the broad strokes from of the books from friends of mine and things like that. And I think we're in the middle of the Lannisters getting theirs part of it. So I'm not sure who's going to survive any of this, though. Because, I mean, there's always, like, ways to get them out of some of these predicaments. Except for, like, Cersei Lannister in that cell. She looks like her hands are tied and it's, like, almost impossible to get out. And she's going to be tried by the Inquisition, which is what this more or less is. And, like, that feels like they're going to be feeling in their favor. And then... I don't know. I guess like the smallest Lannister that's still king. I think Tommen. Yeah, he. It's like him, and then I don't know how like
I think
the old
sister's name is Mysandra.
Yeah, she's the one in Dorne now. I think. Yeah, and
does she not sound like Sansa?
Kinda. Yeah.
I love him. He's gonna be my prince.
Well, yeah, she's like the Sansa version of the Lannister. Because like they all kind of fit into like a mold, I guess. And I suppose.
Well, you know, when you raise people to fit into that mold, it happens.
Every time I see Jamie Lannister with a fake hand, I think Fisto from like He-Man and stuff like that, who had a big giant metal hand.
Yeah. How great was it when he blocked the sword with his hand?
Really great.
I had been waiting for him to do that.
I'm surprised he didn't break it with his hand. He could like you know king or like.
If I'm not mistaken, his hand's supposed to be gold.
Oh, it's gold, so it's more of a softer metal then.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I know
as opposed to steel or something.
Right. I know everybody says gold is a soft metal, and I wouldn't want to get hit with it unless I got to keep it.
Yeah.
But I do think it bends. Because how many of those bite the gold coin to make sure it's real is because it dents.
Yeah.
So when that woman brought that sword down and he caught it, you saw it got stuck in his hand. Yeah. He had to pry it out.
Yep. And then what the...
But it was a lot better than getting stabbed.
The night with him was pretty awesome, too.
Oh, yes. Braun.
Braun, yeah.
I like Braun a lot. We talked about him today over...
Oh, yeah.
DenziCaster.
Yeah.
I like him a lot.
He's one of my favorites. He's all about finding, like, a good jug of wine, a beautiful woman. And that's, like, his perfect day.
Well, he was a mercenary to begin with, so he's come a long way.
I think he met some woman, and she's got some plot of land or something like that. And
well, it's not that he met her. It's that they've arranged for him.
Oh, yeah, they arranged it, and he's not terribly happy with it, I don't think.
Oh, no, he's okay with it. It's not his favorite.
She's not like drop dead gorgeous, but she'll do, I guess.
All right. Well, he's gotten, I hate to say it this way, but he's kind of gotten to the age where he accepts
what happens.
This is the time to settle down, and I can't be a mercenary forever.
He's getting older, and like the fight with the girls of Dorne. I mean, he about died.
Yeah.
And he about died after the fight with the girls of Dorne. Yeah. I love the girls of Dorne. They're
the Sand Snakes.
The Sand Snakes. They're awesome.
All the illegitimate children of Oberyn.
Oberyn Martell, because he's like a man slut. He'll sleep with almost like a lot of people.
Well, they definitely had a different.
He's kind of an open relationship. Kind of
they
person.
Had a different.
And then him and I guess
God, I can't think of the word. What? They have a different moral structure.
Yeah. It's seen differently in different parts of the world.
You're right. It's.
And then what do you think about Reek? Ramsay Snow has beaten Theon Greyjoy to the point of just like mind control, more or less.
Well, I will say this. The character has existed longer in the show than he has in the book.
Yeah. I think he came along later in the books.
I think his sister puts him out of his misery when she finds him in the jail cell.
Uh-huh.
Or the dog's cell, and he won't come out, or he does come out and betrays them. Uh-huh. I think she finally kind of puts him down.
Oh, okay. That happens in the book, he dies or whatever?
Yeah, I think so. Uh-huh. Again, it's been a while since I've read, and it was one of those that didn't stick out very long.
Mm-hmm.
Because
the sister seems to have a pretty good head on her shoulders.
Yeah.
She is like the driving force of like the Greyjoys now, pretty much.
Oh,
I mean, the dad...
She's everything Lord Greyjoy could have wanted in a son.
Yeah.
But because of that social structure, when Lord Greyjoy dies in the book, his brothers fight over the throne.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones who legally have a next...
Yeah, because the women don't have any call for the...
So, let's say Lord Greyjoy has two brothers.
Yeah.
One of them becomes the next lord.
Yeah.
Technically, that guy's sons have the next...
Yeah.
If he doesn't have any sons, then his brothers...
Yeah.
Are next in line.
Mm-hmm.
If those people don't exist anymore, then it falls to the daughter of Lord
Greyjoy.
She's
like the last on the lost on the
so,
totem pole.
Think of it like a family tree.
Yeah.
You go down to the next step, but it's always males. And if you can't find one, then you go back all the way to the top and start with girls.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I always wonder, like, I never see Casterly Rock, and everybody always wants to go back to Casterly Rock because there's nothing happening there.
Cersei wanted to.
Yeah.
If
Cersei wanted to, Tyrion wanted to.
I think a lot
of them wanted
Tyrion
to.
Tyrion wanted to, but his father wasn't going to give it to him.
His father is always about war. It's always about, like, being on the battlefield fighting people, more or less.
Well,
territory.
He just doesn't respect Tyrion. There's no way he would have ever done anything for Tyrion.
Yeah, and let alone let him rule Casterly Rock, which is the Lannister home.
Had Kevan Lannister.
Mm-hmm.
Gave Casterly Rock, English, to Cersei to get her. He wants her out of the capital.
Yeah.
He wants her out of. I can't
King's
remember.
Landing?
Yeah. Did he try to give it to her in the show?
I believe so. I don't really think she took it.
And she wouldn't go?
She wouldn't go. Because she'd stay with her with Joffrey. Because
Joffrey's
the A number one thing, apple of her eye, etc. And same with Tommen, even though she wants to manipulate Tommen to her own ends.
Cersei has her father's ambition.
Yeah.
Tyrion had his father's wisdom, mental capacities.
Yeah.
And
Tywin was like the perfect.
And Jaime
soldier.
Had
the
his
bravery
father's
and fighting ability.
Skill. Yeah.
Yeah.
He even surpassed it.
Yeah.
Cersei thinks that she's the true heir of the father in the book. She's like, if I'd have been born a male, none of this would have been a bad thing.
Which is probably true. She probably would have like taken the whole thing.
The problem is that. Because she has that chip on her shoulder, she walks into the battle unprepared.
Yeah.
And then the other side thing is she thinks she's the queen.
Yeah.
And then, no, she's beyond reproach and touch, and it leads her to do stupid shit.
Yeah. There was a part in the show, I think, young Cersei and her friend went out to the bog, and they met the witch or something like that. And the witch gave her a bad prophecy, like, you're gonna die with your bloody child in your arms or something like that, or something along the lines of that prophecy. And she's like, yeah, you're a stupid old woman, and I don't believe anything you say, but... You never know in this world. You can't get attached to a lot of these characters because they will die on you.
Check it in the book. Yeah. That prophecy's more crooked.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. That is one thing about Game of Thrones that you will never see in it. Walking Dead is the only other one I'd even come close to saying.
Yeah, with a higher death count of like main characters and stuff like that.
Well, the only reason why you could say Walking Dead has a higher count is because they had less people.
Yeah.
The percentages are better in Walking Dead. You're going to get more...
Or Game of Thrones, you got like anywhere 30 people in an episode, yeah. You know, that you're paying kind of keeping track of in different places.
So, I remember when the Purple Wedding happened, and everybody was all cheerful about Joffrey being dead. And
yep. I think Steve-O was one of the midgets in that.
Steve-O
from Jackass? No, Steve-O. The little guy from Jackass.
Wee Man?
He was one of the midgets.
You think so?
That was, I think, played I think Stark. In the little fight.
They reenacted their Five Kings battle.
Yep.
So, that's crazy. Yeah. What I was going to say was a lot of people were cheerful about it, and I don't know, man. I think that's a litmus test.
Yeah.
I think that event, Joffrey dying, is your litmus test.
Yeah.
If you take joy in his death, you might be a little psycho.
I don't know. Joffrey was a bad guy.
Well, Joffrey was an asshole.
He was a psychotic, you know. He was like a psychopath or whichever you want to call him.
The only defense you could possibly say about Joffrey was he was a product of his environment.
Yeah, or product of his parents, the Lannisters,
very
much.
Well,
teaching him a certain moral code.
His quote unquote father's negligence
and
his mother's crookedness.
His mother's overprotectiveness at some points, yeah.
But he's still a person.
Yeah.
And when you take joy in the death of a person
makes you feel
I don't know, I
feel bad or something.
Yeah, I think if you have absolutely no sympathy for the situation.
Oh, I left out a favorite character. I think the grandmother Tyrell is pretty awesome, and I think she's actually the one that poisoned Joffrey in the Purple Wedding. I believe she's like
between her and Littlefinger.
Yeah, between her and Littlefinger, they organized that whole poisoning and escape of Sansa. And I love the grandmother because she's always just never back down, and I don't give a damn because I don't have long, and I'm gonna watch out for my kids.
Her only real fault is the same fault of every noble.
Yeah,
she's a noble and doesn't realize that
the people are suffering.
Like the High Sparrow said, you know, when the many are no longer afraid of the few,
that's when you have a revolution.
Yeah, .. threat hanging in the air.
Yeah, because they're. Revolt! Take their money. Take your money away, and then they will be the few.
That's going to be interesting.
Irony, really.
if that's what happens. I remember I said, you know, the final end. I got a little money on the Daenerys and Jon Snow coming together.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's an equal odds that the Seven Kingdoms shatter.
Yeah.
And go back to being separate.
Yeah.
I think the Kingdom of Westeros is a little bit like Europe, Rome.
Yeah.
And without a common enemy or expansion to be the thread.
Well, you're gonna have a common enemy coming pretty soon.
Oh, well, that's if.
That's, you know, if the, like, I mean, I give the North all the credit in the world, but I don't see how they're gonna fight against.
Oh, they definitely can.
Yeah, they can try.
once you
have that common enemy, they're all gonna kind of.
How far do they
gel.
Retreat? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And think about it. We've been talking about this for about an hour now.
Yeah.
And all we've been talking about is characters and story fluff.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about histories of the houses. We haven't talked about the Maesters.
Yeah.
I mean, there's an entire organization that no one ever thinks about or pays any attention. But Cersei's new sidekick, crony guy, is a guy who got
Maester.
Kicked out of the Maesters.
Yep.
Because they did not respect his research. It,
because he's Dr. Frankenstein, more or less. He's Dr. Frankenstein.
It's in the
Maester,
blasphemy.
And he's working on the mountain. Because the mountain was poisoned by Oberyn, I think, at the fight. He still scratched him with, I think, his spear.
And he may have saved his life.
Yeah. But did he save everything?
There's a character in the book who everyone remarks how much he is the same size as the mountain, but the guy never takes his helmet off. He never speaks.
Huh.
I personally think that Maester saves his life, but he's kind of damn near brain dead.
Yeah.
And just kind of goes along doing what he's told.
Yeah, like a Frankenstein's monster-esque character,
realistically,
I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's one of the tinfoil hat conspiracies of the show, of the books.
Yeah. What do you think of Dorne? Do you think the King of Dorne can keep Oberyn's sister at bay? Or do you think Oberyn's sister will still strike out Jaime?
Well, realize that's
him?
His sister as well.
Yeah. Or I don't know what... I thought...
It is.
Yeah, it is. Okay, yeah. She had two brothers, I guess.
This prince... Yeah, that prince is the oldest one.
Yeah.
But as you saw, he was in that chair. He's crippled.
Yeah.
And Oberon was the youngest.
Yeah.
And kind of the favored, but he supported his brother.
Yeah.
He
probably didn't want to rule a kingdom. He wanted to be out womanizing and having fun.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. I'm interested to see how the Dorne cycle goes in the the show.
Yeah.
I find it a lot more interesting than I did in the books.
Yeah.
I have a bad habit of when I read the book the first time, I kind of, especially books that skip around like this,
mm-hmm.
I kind of skim through chapters to get to the other characters I'm more interested in.
Yeah.
So often stories like this I have to read 3 or 4 times to get a good picture.
I like the whole Jaime Lannister thing. I think he's more of a heroic figure than most of the Lannisters, and he's wanting to get to a goal that's like positive.
Well, he does have the more traditional...
He's not about slaughtering people and showing the... Like, his power or whatever.
Well, to be fair, the rest of the Lannisters aren't like that either. It was just
That's
Tywin.
True. Yeah.
I mean, that whole...
I think Jaime was like that at the beginning of the series.
Yeah.
And then after going through all these trials he's gone through, losing his hand at the tantamount of that.
And
he's learned some humility.
And learning some honor from Brienne.
And he's learning to think about how other people feel, how he's going to be viewed by other people.
He is doing that traditional hero's journey where the cycle goes
Where he is inherently just starting out the story... fractured or broken, and he slowly fixes himself
as
he
moves on. But
you made
a very good point. I mean, in the beginning, he had a position of honor, but that didn't matter to him. It was the challenge. Where am I going to get my next challenge?
He was the Hand of the King, but he didn't care. He wanted to fight
somebody. Well, he wasn't the Hand of the King.
Or he was eventually, I think, the Hand of the King.
He was a guard. He was in the
He was
the
guard of Baratheon, yeah.
He was in the King's Guard. And it's a position for life. You give up your right to marry and family. It's almost like the Black Watch.
Yeah, the Night's Watch. And it's the Night's Watch. I mean, Tyrion was constricted into the Night's Watch, and then he just, like, left or some point.
No, he was visiting.
He was visiting?
Yeah, he was just visiting. That was just a visit.
Because nobody just gets out of the Night's Watch. I guess it runs away.
No.
You're
in the very first episode of Game of Thrones,
yeah.
When Ned executes that man, that's why he's executed.
He ran from Night's Watch?
He ran
from the Night's Watch?
Yep.
Huh.
And he ran from the Night's Watch because the people he was with got killed by White Walkers.
Yep.
So, the very first episode.
Yep.
The opening chapter of the book. That's what happens.
Cool. So what do you think? Do you think I'm guessing probably a lot of the season finale coming up is going to be like the White Walkers siege coming down Castle Black.
Well, going by just the title and what I know of the books, it says Mother's Mercy.
Yep.
I could tell you what I think, but it might be spoiler. Do you care?
I don't know. I don't know if... Do you think people would want to...
No, I'm talking to you. They already know we're spoiler.
Yeah.
No, you being spoiled is the only one I'm worried about at the moment.
It doesn't really matter to me, really.
Okay. So, you brought up the trial of Cersei.
Yeah.
In the book, there's the trial of Cersei. And she is found guilty of some of the stuff that they can kind of prove. Like definitely the incest with...
Jaime.
No.
No?
The cousin.
Oh, okay.
Lancel Lannister.
Oh, okay.
The one who shaved his head and become a sparrow.
Yeah.
That one is without a doubt. I don't know if...
Because I'm sure Lancel's one of the sparrows. So he's
obviously
testify against her.
I can't remember how the trial goes. I know how the punishment goes.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if she admits to some to deflect the rest.
Plea bargain, kind of?
Yeah, kind of that.
Yeah.
What she has to do is she has to walk home naked. She has to walk through Flea Bottom, through all of it. I don't remember if they shave her head or not.
Yeah.
I think they shave her head.
But that would be like a big blow to her. Like,
it's a... I hate to say it this way, but it is a traditional female punishment in many different cultures. It shows a disobedient wife or shit like that.
Huh.
I know there's references of it in the Native American cultures.
Yeah.
But you got to realize, I mean, you're talking about hundreds and hundreds of cultures.
Yeah.
So it's hard to nail it down to which one I've heard of. And I believe it was a Chinese custom for a while.
Huh. Yeah, I could see that because some of the women in Chinese culture is kind of second class.
Or sometimes there was even like facial mutilation.
Yeah.
Like cutting an ear off or shit like
depending
that.
Depending on what the crime was. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Different cultures had different... I mean, there were physical deformities that men received as well.
Yeah.
But they weren't for the crimes committed against their own family. It would have been crimes committed against, like, the government.
The church or whatever.
Yeah. Or the church, yeah. Mm. So, in this aspect, she has to take, like, a walk of shame.
Yeah.
And the trick is, she does it.
Uh-huh.
Because she's Cersei, and she's right.
Yep.
In her head.
Oh, yeah. She's always right in her head. And no matter if you have somebody screaming at you in the face.
Yeah, I won't say she comes out of it unscathed psychologically.
Yeah.
But she comes out a lot better than you think she's going to.
Yeah.
So that's the mother's mercy.
Sleepwater's a rough part of the town. She could get, like, raped.
Yeah, well, the concept is mother's mercy.
Yeah.
If you walk home through this shame, it's only through the mother's mercy that strengthens you.
Yeah.
So.
Huh. Cool.
Now, what else happens during that episode? I ain't got a flipping clue.
I'm probably going to say the White Walkers get to Castle... I don't know if they get to Castle Black, but they're at least on the way, or most of the way there.
I think we're going to see the ramifications of Jon getting back with the Wildlings.
With the Wildlings.
If that didn't happen in Episode 9, because I haven't seen Episode 9. If that didn't happen in Episode 9, then it might happen in Episode 10.
I could see that. Because we have people there that
I guess I could click on the link here and read the...
Synopsis?
Yeah, synopsis.
It's going to spoil stuff for you.
Yeah, yeah. We just said there, Daenerys is lighting people on fire at the wall. Jon and Tormund return to the wall, accompanied by the surviving Night Watch and the Wild.
Tormund, that's his name, the big red-haired guy.
They then approach the gate, where Alysair, despite his agreements with Jon, orders the gate to be opened. Despite his disagreements. Okay. Jon believes that his mission was a failure, though Sam points out that he saved thousands of wildlings that would have been killed by the White Walkers.
Yep.
Jon is also aware that many of his Night Watch brothers are unhappy with wildlings being let past the wall, and Alysair warns him that his compassion will get him killed.
Get them all killed.
Okay.
Because he doesn't trust the wildlings being inside the walls.
So...
But Jon's trying to bring them all together.
How much spoiler warning do I have to keep telling you? There's some more story about Jon beyond this in the books.
Yeah.
Now, obviously...
I'm pretty sure there's going to be problems there.
Obviously, they can deviate, because they have.
Yeah, they've deviated from Brooke, I think, a lot.
I won't say a lot, but there are several key aspects that have deviated, like the Sansa.
I think people have died. People have died that by now that are still alive. Yeah, and then other people have died that are still alive in the books, I think. I want to say.
You know, to be fair...
Because I saw an article about Martin, and then the... Beninoff, and then the other fella.
I can tell you one that's not story factor amazing, and it's really kind of trivial, but to give you a point, what you're saying is Master Aemon doesn't die in Castle Black.
Yeah.
Master Aemon, Samwell, and Gilly are sent somewhere. I don't exactly remember from my head, but during the boat trip, Master Aemon dies on the boat.
That's different.
Okay. Mm. The end result is the old man dies from being old.
Yeah. But it just happens in a different
spot. Right, it just happens in a different spot.
Yeah.
And realistically, in the show, I think they did that because of the age of the actor.
Yeah.
I think that was probably his way of leaving the show with some grace and dignity kind of idea.
Yeah.
Well, here's an example. He's supposed to be the Mad King's brother.
Mm-hmm.
That's not who he was.
Yeah.
He was like the Mad King's uncle or granduncle.
Yeah.
That's how old he was. He was like two or four generations removed from Daenerys.
Wow.
Because he's like 100 and something years old.
Yeah. Huh. So,
I thought that was interesting.
They grow him a long time in that one.
Well, any closing ideas you want to do? Like I said, we're talking about a lot of different stuff.
It's a wonderful show, and I'm anxious to see where it goes, pretty much. I think all the actors are doing an awesome job so far. I'm not really bored as much by this season. It's more action-packed. Keeps the story kind of popping.
Have I inspired you to check a look at the books?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Cliff Notes, at least.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, really. Probably
check out the
longer.
Wikipedia page, the Song of Fire and Ice Wikipedia. Not from on Wikipedia, but their own wiki.
Uh-huh.
That way, if you get a random idea, you could get the encyclopedic shortened version.
I don't know if I want to spoil it for myself. I'd like to see how they go. I'd like to see the finished idea. But the show's creators say they could go for 10 seasons on this material.
Oh, sure.
And Martin's like, I don't know if I want you to do that. But, I mean, if you people still want to hear about this stuff, then I can slow down or something. Because he's writing the next book right now, there's going to be another book.
Yeah, yeah. It's supposed to be a 7-novel set.
Uh-huh. There's going to be, I think the last book has like a hint of springtime or something like that. This is what it's called.
Yeah.
It's like the light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, it's because you were born during the long summer. And you remember the smell of grass.
Winter is coming, and winter is coming with the big old army.
Oh, man. I think one aspect about Game of Thrones, we made the joke, you know, people die, and we compared it to Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Now, Walking Dead spoilers.
Oh.
Hold on, I'm going to give it a few more seconds just in case you got to think about Walking Dead spoilers.
I think everybody's
okay. To be fair, it happened like half a season ago, so mm-hmm. By the time we print this, who knows? When Beth died, I was done.
Yeah.
I was done because not only did she die in such a trivial, stupid manner.
Yeah.
And then on The Talking Dead, the talk show that comes in after it,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
When the creator kind of just said, well, we killed Beth to remind you that people can die.
Huh.
That seems so wasteful.
Yeah, it does. Because that was a really heartfelt character, and a lot of people identify with Beth, and she was
When T-Dog died,
mm-hmm.
because we wanted to remind you that people died, he did it saving people.
He did it saving his wife, the main fellow's wife.
Right, right. Mrs. Grimes.
Yeah.
Lori.
Yeah, Lori Grimes.
And other characters.
And then I think the son, too, was
yeah,
there.
Carol was there, too.
He did it saving people in a heroic way.
That was the point.
His death had meaning. Is what you're saying. Yeah.
Some characters, they die by random tragedies.
Yeah, random acts of whatever, you know. Not everybody that dies has a thoughtful meaning. Sometimes rocks just fall. Yeah, boom.
Some characters died because they got trapped in a bad situation. Like, Andrea's character died.
Yeah.
See, she's not dead in the comics. At least up to the comics I read.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which go beyond where they're at now.
Her and Rick Grimes have a relationship later on.
They do.
In the comics.
So, that may have been a point of the actress wanted to leave.
Or something like that,
and they
yeah.
created the story.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, her character dying, being trapped in the room with that nerd character that was the friend of the governor. I can't remember his name, but don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
While she died to remind you that characters could die at any given time,
mm-hmm.
she died because she was trapped. You know
yeah.
what I mean? So, there's examples of ways of proving that everyone can die without
yeah.
it being a trash.
Yeah.
And I felt that Beth's death was very much trash.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I felt that way before mm-hmm. in other aspects.
Yeah.
But I'd gotten to the point now, realistically, I made a joke. It's like, I've got to break up with Walking Dead. It's an abusive relationship.
Yeah, because they keep hurting your feelings.
Right. And, and there is, in my opinion,
they hurt your feelings and they don't care.
Yeah, there seems to be no reason to continue hoping.
Yeah. Why continue hoping if, like, just your little angel dies kind of thing?
I mean, now, to you, brave listener, who've made it this far into our little spiels.
Thank you, by the way.
Yeah, definitely. If you're like, oh man, he's totally got it wrong, or oh man, I watch it for the action and I want to see what's going to happen.
Or I watch it for Norman Reedus because he's just so
that.
Dead sexy.
Go for that.
Yeah.
That's not why I watched it. I watched it because...
characters you can relate to?
Well,
what'd you say?
My favorite aspect of the zombie genres done mm-hmm. like Walking Dead is the survivalist aspect.
Yeah.
I keep watching this mess and going... What is wrong with these people? Why don't they A? Why don't they B? Why don't mm-hmm. they C?
Yeah.
And I'm sure everyone does. We all are much more intelligent people than they are because we're safe on the couch and ain't nobody trying to eat us.
Yeah.
So, I know the fallacy of my own imagination.
Understandable.
But, they can't win.
Yeah.
They cannot win. And every time I think they've got a shot, not that they are winning, that they got a shot to win... The show wanted to remind me they don't. And I'm not trying to persuade you, listener,
or you,
Roger, not to watch it anymore.
I agree.
But I'm fucking done.
I felt like the Beth's death wasn't really warranted. Her stay at their compound didn't have that much of an emotional impact on her that she was just out for blood at that point. She could have let that lie and less walked out with everybody, in my opinion.
Well, the other side of the coin is...
And if she died, give her death meaning. Make her save somebody else. Or make it...
Beth really wanted that woman to die.
Yeah.
If she really thought, this woman is a danger to everybody else...
Yeah.
I think she's smart enough to do something besides try to stab somebody with a fucking paring knife.
Yeah, like tell Rick, tell, you know, Norman.
Right, Lewis, right.
Something like that. Somebody Daryl. That's like Daryl, yeah. Somebody that's good with weapons. Daryl could have put a bolt in her across
Daryl
the room.
Daryl would have done anything for
Beth.
Yeah,
obviously.
I mean,
they were getting along really well.
A lot of people were trying to do this whole relationship thing with them, and I think there was a relationship with them. No. Daryl was being the big brother.
Yeah.
And he was being the big brother he always wished he had had.
Yeah, because he wishes he had, like, some
right.
little sister
and
to
I
look
think,
after.
I think Beth's strength for Daryl was
yeah.
she helped Daryl remember what it was to be a human.
Yeah, because Daryl and
was falling.
Think of Daryl's upbringing, him and Michael Rooker being brothers
right.
off in the swamp or wherever they're from.
And the abusive behavior
abusive
that he got
behavior,
from his brother
racist,
and his father.
Racist behavior, stuff like that, you know.
Nope, you're absolutely right. So mm-hmm.
That's the environment he was brought up in, and then he meets all these other people that have different views, and he wants to be like their family. It's like, it's not the family you have, it's the family you make,
right, right.
kind of thing.
So bringing that back around to Game of Thrones, in
mm-hmm.
Game of Thrones, there's still rooms for hope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially the TV show. Now, while Reek died in the book, I'm watching this mess, and
Reek's still alive.
And I'm sitting here going, Reek's gonna like the candle. Reek don't like the candle.
Yeah.
Not only does Reek not like the candle, but he tells on
Ramsay. Yeah.
Yeah. He tells on Sansa.
Yeah.
Sansa confronts him. She gets the truth about her brothers out.
Yeah.
Two steps back, one step forward.
Yeah.
We gotta step forward. I can still watch Theon and go, can Sansa bring Theon back?
It's possible. It's possible.
Can
It's like Ramsay like conditioned him to be like
right, right.
You could undo that conditioning. It would take a lot, probably.
Ramsay broke Theon.
He broke his psyche more or less.
But he
yeah.
fucked up and he put him with the one person who might be able to help him.
Mm-hmm. And then what about Ramsay's other girlfriends or whatever? And
the kennel master.
What do they think about him and Sansa? Might they kill Sansa?
But you get my point is that there's a dangling of hope, and I believe that the hope could be reached. Even if I'm wrong, it still feels like, and other stories, there's different...
And what's going to happen if that candle does light?
I mean, Game of Thrones got, what, 14 threads?
Yeah.
At any given moment.
Oh yeah.
So if you can't,
what happens when that candle lights? You got Brienne and you got
right.
What's his name?
Podrick.
Yeah. He's apparently packing.
I love him.
Who's apparently packing, but that doesn't really mean much in a fight.
He's another. He's another Samwise.
Yeah. He's like a little Samwise for Brienne. Just to. I don't know. I like Brienne teaching him how to be a squire and teaching him things and stuff like that. I like to see people's characters' development.
Yeah.
From point
yeah.
A to point B to point C. I like Andrea in Walking Dead. She learned how to fight. She learned how to shoot a gun and stuff like that. And there's a character development. You get to from A to B to C and then dead, but still. I like to watch the evolution of the characters.
I'm on board with that idea.
How they go.
But yeah, I mean, you can see what I'm saying with
mm-hmm.
Game of Thrones is that there's hopes.
Yeah.
And it might not be
little strands of hope. The little strings you can climb up
right.
on.
And if it's not the threads
you
like the most.
Yeah.
There's hopes in other threads.
My biggest hope right now is Tyrion and Daenerys. I'm in the
doing team. What?
Doing anything. I think they're a good. They're a good power couple right now.
I like the way they presented Tyrion in this talking
mm-hmm.
to Daenerys a lot better than the books.
Because
mm-hmm. in the books he's kind of like, I'll help you as long as I get to rape my sister.
Really?
Yeah.
That's what he wants to do. He wants to rape us.
Well, to him it's a revenge thing.
Yeah.
My sister wants me dead. My sister, you know, never treated me. I'm going to hurt her back.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
and it really is. It's
he wants to attack her pride as more
right,
than,
right. And
yeah.
I may have just started the flame war. If anybody listens to this, because everybody already hates Game of Thrones for being so quote unquote rapey.
It's not. There's not a lot of rape though. I mean, there's more death than rape. The biggest rape here lately was the Sansa thing, and Sansa was a virgin at the time, and a lot of people are up in arms about that. Some senators said they're going to stop watching because of that.
In the book, Khal Drogo does not rape Daenerys.
Yeah,
he does not force himself on her.
Mm-hmm.
They take it slow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she gets hurt because she's small and a virgin, and
yeah.
there are. Ways that they are doing things that makes her feel disrespected.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but it's never taken.
Yeah.
She learns to be a lover, quote
yeah.
unquote, from one of her handmaidens,
mm-hmm.
not to defend herself, but because she cares about Drago.
Yeah.
Because, A, she wants to have fun, and B, she wants...
to please him.
To please her husband, right. Yeah. So,
she
that
wants to
was...
be a good wife.
The show was totally... I don't know why they went that way, but they did it. And it was in the beginning, so I guess in some ways you can kind of go... They had their water wings on. They were learning to swim.
You're trying to solidify the savagery of the
rave scene between Cersei and Jaime.
Jaime had next to Joffrey's dead body.
Right. That wasn't a rape in the book.
I didn't think it was in the book at all or whatever.
It was.
Was it?
They wanted each other.
Uh-huh.
They were broken, and the constant reason why their incest is done is because they constantly feel like they are each other's half.
Yeah.
And that together they are whole.
When you feel bad sometimes.
And
great.
So that moment of heartbreak between the two of them, they comforted themselves in their traditional weird way.
Yeah.
I hate to say it this way, but their incestual behavior is the same as like a 9-year-old still sucking his thumb. It's a calming behavior it's a bad habit that they've gotten into.
Pretty much, yeah.
So, you know...
I wonder if that's a aspect of the overdevelopment of the father and the mother saying that you are the Lannisters, you're the best thing in the world. Lannisters are the best. Always look out for Lannister. Lannister is the top of the food chain.
Since you say that, I'm trying to
find anything
remember.
Better than Lannister.
I think part of it also was...
is like the overdevelopment, like, you know, somebody like pushing their child, like, you're the best in the whole wide world.
And part of it was they are twins.
Yeah.
And they are side by side. I think a small part of it was Cersei did it because she could.
Yeah.
Because it
kind of... could be a rebel against her father, too.
Yeah, it kind of put her in control over Jaime.
Yeah.
Because
you get the emotional bond past right. What's being bringing a brother and sister being lovers.
God, it's so twisted talking about this like this, but...
Yeah, I know.
But then you
have more of a hold over him,
over
what he does.
And now Ramsay does rape his wife.
Mm-hmm.
It just isn't Sansa in the book.
Yeah.
It's Jenny Poole. It's
somebody else. Okay.
But... and I'm not saying it don't happen in the book. There are activities of such behavior in the book. And it's never drawn about like... okay, so in the TV show, the thing between Daenerys and Khal Drogo gets better. Yay, and they fall in love. And
and
I can see people going, what the fuck are you trying to tell?
Yeah.
They're gonna bring in the
fighting, the debate of like a victim falls from
the attacker
or something like that.
And in the books... when rape happens,
it's
not painted in any way other than a deplorable evil act.
Yeah.
Which is what it is, you know? And unless you've got something else, I think that pretty much nails what I want to say about that topic.
Yeah, I'm good.
Oh, Lord. I think the religious kookiness that is undertones in the book and in the show bug me a lot.
What do you mean?
The people of the North worship the weirwood trees. They're kind of like druids from history.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of bowed to the Seven to protect what was left of the trees because they were getting cut down left and right. I don't know if you remember, and I don't know if it happened in the show. Maybe you remember. I don't. There were times where Ned went to the Grove in King's Landing and knelt before a stump.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you do that in the show?
It's not. No, there's a tree in Winterfell that that's a sacred tree and stuff like that.
But there was in the book there was a stump in King's Landing and that was all that was left.
Sounds familiar. I'm not sure. I can't tell you for sure.
Right. But you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So they made concessions to protect what was left of their trees.
Yeah.
You've got the Flame God.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the Many Faced God.
Yep.
You got the Seven.
I like the Many Faced God. I really like that whole arc.
Well, I don't know if it's my own interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the times we talked about the things I do remember, I remember them pretty good.
Yeah.
And that's why I speak with a bit more confidence in that than I am about to.
Yeah.
I don't remember if there are other gods in Bravosi.
Bravos? Yeah.
Okay. Or Marine or other areas.
Yeah.
Because if they just lightly touch upon them, I kind of lose track in the midst of the story.
Mm-hmm.
There are other gods in the world
that
other people are involved with that I just don't remember.
Yeah.
And I don't remember if there was many gods and then, you know, the Assassin's Guild's all like, but there is only the God of Death.
Yeah.
Or if there are no other gods, it's just the God of Death who wears many masks.
It's just the God of many faces.
Yeah. I don't know how it stands, but the point being is...
and then the woman in red with Stannis is all, oh, the flame God, let's
the Lord of Light and Fire.
Yeah. And then she's pretty sure the Lord of Light and Fire will give her power to
the kookiness do whatever. The kookiness is, if she wasn't burning people alive, I would totally be on board for that one. Because mm-hmm. it's brought people back from the dead.
Yeah.
There was a knight who worked with, like, a Robin Hood-like group. They
the Brothers of the Steel or something like that.
Yeah, the Brothers of the Black Banner or some shit like that.
Yeah,
you're right.
Brothers Without Banners.
Brothers Without Banners, that's right.
Yeah, yeah, they were in like one episode. I'd love to see more of that, but they're...
That guy that the Hound fought?
Yeah.
He's died a handful of times.
Yeah, and he came back because of the Lord of Light?
And the other, the Priest of Light keeps bringing him back.
Huh, neat.
So, I mean, you got Resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
And... We can talk
What does that say about all the dead characters in the series now?
Yeah. Well, you know, you can talk about what you want, but when the zombies walk and mm-hmm. shadow monsters are birthed and dead people are resurrected, mm-hmm. you definitely got a level of fantasy.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, you can say, well, dragons could exist. Here's some biology that explains what happens.
Yeah.
But you can't science resurrection. You can't science the dead.
Yeah. There's actually a book called Flight of Dragons that actually tells you, that walks you through the step-by-step of how a dragon breathes fire and stuff like that.
I remember one person going, well, if dragons were real, their wings would not be able to sustain their flight. And someone went, they breathe fire. That means they have hydrogen or methane inside of them, which is lighter than air.
Dragons eat limestone. And limestone is cut up in their craw and it makes gas.
Sure.
Them.
I like it's that. That's pretty funny.
Much, no, that's like the argument they use in the it's a kids movie called The Flight of Dragons.
Right.
Back in the '80s when the kids movies were real and they had like good stuff.
Do you remember
them.
That movie that was supposed to place like it was like a post apocalyptic world in England?
Uh-huh.
But it was because dragons came back.
Oh yeah. Oh, what was it called? A Dragon
Face
or something like that.
Don't
with
even.
Matthew McConaughey in it?
I think so.
Yeah.
But they all like live underground.
Yeah. And dragons are the big problem.
Right.
I never understood that. Why can't somebody make a movie where the dragons are the nice guy and then they made Aragorn or whatever it was called. Aragon. And then, not... I didn't.
Did you ever read the book?
I read part of the book and I just didn't... The movie, I don't think it was put together that well, in my opinion. I would make something like The Flight of Dragons if anybody gets a chance to watch that. I recommend
there are parts... I think the second half of Aragon
mm-hmm.
was okay.
Mm-hmm.
The book. I mean, the movie was okay. Everything getting up to Aragorn and Saphira's training
mm-hmm.
was crap.
Mm-hmm.
They rushed through it. It rushed through what the book was doing. And realistically, there's no way they could have done a book adaptation to the movie.
Yeah.
In 2 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, everybody talks about Avatar, the Last Airbender movie, and...
You can't rush... What was it? 26
episodes for season 1?
One season. In one movie.
13 hours of cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
You can't compact that into 2 hours. Even if you say half of the episodes are fluff.
Yeah, filler.
For character development and comedy, because it's a fucking cartoon.
Yeah.
Half of 13 hours is still 6.5 hours.
There was a lot of differences in the movie from the TV show that were unforgivable in a lot of fans' eyes. I think that's what downed the movie.
And if you had never seen the cartoon...
If I'd never seen the cartoon, I would have liked the movie more.
The movie would have been okay.
Yeah.
It still functionally pushes your ass through it super fast
mm-hmm.
and narrates instead of shows.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot more montages in it just to move stuff along.
I believe... I'm trying to remember the female's character. Sokka is the boy.
What is her name? Aang is the Avatar, obviously.
I feel so stupid.
It starts with a K. Katara?
Katara.
Like that, yeah.
Katara spends more of the movie telling you what's going on than
actually
talking
showing,
in the movie as her character.
Yeah.
I mean, you can...
And
people,
then, like, you rush to the end of the movie, and then you got this... In the show, there was a love affair between, like, you know...
Sokka and the princess.
And that all just kind of got fluffed over in the movie. It's like, hey, we're here. What's going on? Oh, it's the Fire Tribe. Fight.
And everybody seemed to have a problem with the people who were cast. And, you know, that's an opinion base. But what we're talking about...
They differentiated by race, by different fires and elements and stuff like that. I liked how they did that. That's one of the few things I did like.
I know a lot of people are like...
Fire Tribe was Persian or whichever
they
were and stuff like that.
They were heavily Persian looking, but
yeah.
If you look at the cartoon, their uniforms could easily be described that way because they got the curled toe thing.
I mean, what I was going to say was I know a lot of people could look at our point and go, it's an opinion as well. Mm-hmm. But the point of it being 26 episodes, 13 hours, jammed in a two-hour movie.
Now, if you made a trilogy of movies depicting what happened in season one, then that would be
I think you could have even got away with it making a duo.
Yeah, or two movies.
A double.
Yeah.
Part one, part two.
And, yeah, I saw on Facebook, Ron Perlman wants to see Hellboy 3 get made. So
I wouldn't mind that.
I recommend that.
I've enjoyed
I'd like to see both Hellboy
movies.
And I think, I don't know if a lot of people are behind it, but I for one, would love to see it.
Have you seen the animated one?
Yeah, I have seen it. I liked it.
I watched it some time ago. I enjoyed it, but I don't remember it. Does that make any sense?
Mm, yeah.
I do that a lot.
I saw Ron Perlman actually visit the cancer as Hellboy, and he went in
three hours
of makeup to get just go in
Is
there.
Anything else you want to, on our tangent ride out, want to go over?
I'm on board with some of this. Not really. I don't know. Whatever you want to talk about.
I'm looking forward to the Ant-Man movie.
Oh, yeah. Did you see the new movie posters that came out?
Nope.
It's like shows Thor's hammer and shows little Ant-Man standing on it. He's like, no hammers, no problem. I'm Ant-Man.
Who the hell needs to pick him up when you can walk over him?
Exactly. I'd like to really see Ant-Man. I like Paul Rudd as an actor, and I like Michael Douglas. And I think it's going to be really good. They're making some of these like lesser characters big movies and stuff like that. And I want to see them do well. I'd love to see them, like Black Panther and stuff like that.
Hank Pym is Michael Douglas's character, who is the original Ant-Man in the comics.
Yeah.
He was one of the first Avengers in the comics.
Yeah.
Him, Wasp, Thor, Iron Man, Hulk.
Yeah.
Scott Lang, who becomes the second Ant-Man, who's the one in the movie.
Paul Rudd, yeah.
He substitutes for Mr. Fantastic in the Fantastic Four.
Really?
Huh. Yeah.
Interesting.
Every character in the Fantastic Four has stepped out from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
Different people have stepped in their place.
Mm-hmm.
I think his storyline was that Mr. Fantastic and the Invisible Woman took a little time off from the team to work on their marriage kind of idea.
That's cool, yeah.
And that's when he stepped in. But he was an Avenger as well.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to it. I know it's not going to be everything I want it to be.
I think it's going to be a fun romp.
But I think it's going to be fun.
A fun romp and introduce the characters, which is what we need to do right now. Just get to know these characters. What do you like? Right. What do you don't like?
I want Hank Pym.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get it.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. As much as this isn't going to be what I want, I think it's going to be much funnier.
Is it based more on the Ultimate Avenger or something like that?
No.
Or any of the newer comics or what?
No. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. No, the Ultimate Ant-Man is Hank Pym as well.
Uh-huh.
And no, this is... I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're just going to pretend that Hank Pym was a scientist in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's near the end of his life, and...
He wants to pass his knowledge on.
And some bad things are happening on with his technology and stuff, and he needs somebody to be the body he can't be anymore.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
And the woman, I think her name is Lily in the actress. She was on Lost, and she was in the Hobbit. As that elf that was added to the movie.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
She's going to be playing the daughter of Hank Pym and Janet Pym.
Yeah.
The Wasp was what Janet's name was. I think it'd be neat if she becomes the Wasp in the movie.
Probably, yeah.
To Scott's Ant-Man.
I would hope so, because there's always got to be a Wasp and an Ant-Man, pretty much.
I think it'd
together.
Be awesome.
All the animated movies, I've always seen them as a couple.
And then the bad guy is Yellowjacket,
mm-hmm.
which was a Hank Pym. Persona.
Mm.
Hank Pym has a bad habit of personas in the Marvel comics.
Yeah.
He started off as Ant-Man, then he became Yellowjacket, then he became Goliath, or I might have him out of order, but...
Yeah.
And then, as Hank Pym, he started doing both up and down, and I've always liked him better as the scientist adventurer than I do as the costume superhero.
Yeah. What's your take on the new Fantastic Four? We get a lot of debate with Johnny Storm's black.
Yeah.
I don't see the race swapping as much of an issue.
Well, let's go ahead and step on that landmine and get that out of the way.
Yeah, why not?
All right. I'm going to try to explain this as best I can. It may get muddled. If they chose the actor that they chose because he does not look like Chris Evans, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
If they chose a black man because he's not a blonde-haired white man... That's bullshit.
Uh-huh.
That's racism, realistically.
Uh-huh.
If they chose this man because they liked the way he personified John Storm, and they were willing to manipulate the story, the traditional story, to fit that,
go for it.
If he's
what
the,
do
if
I
he's
care?
The best one for the job.
Right. Well,
much.
I think the best one for the job would never be right. No mm. one is the best person for the job.
Well,
ever.
Out of the people,
but I get what you're saying.
Out of the people auditioned, he
if they
did,
saw
he
that
did
and
the
went,
best.
"That's yeah. the one I want," then yeah. that's the one they want.
Yeah.
And I'll second this up by saying Stan Lee don't have a fucking problem with it, and Stan Lee wrote the Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
The only negative I'm going to say to this, and I don't want people to take it the wrong way, and I'm kind of afraid they will, but they should have went ahead and made Sue Black too. Not because a black man can't adopt a white woman, but my point being is, it seems half-assed.
Yeah, this one seemed, I think, their step-brother and sister or something like that. It's the storyline.
Johnny's dad adopts Sue.
Yeah.
She's his adopted sister.
Mm-hmm.
I think it should have just been his sister.
Mm-hmm.
They should have made her a black woman, allowed the relationship between Reed and Sue grow normally, that the race thing is not a thing.
Yeah.
By leaving one, by changing one and leaving one, you've created a thing.
It's interesting. They did that before, like you watched. Do you watch the show The Flash?
Yeah.
The show The Flash.
And
black,
Alan. Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
A black father.
Or Miss
and
West.
His daughter Iris.
Iris West. That's right.
Adopt like a little white fella, and then boom, they grow up a sister and brother. Boom.
I don't know if the West adopt Barry in the comics because
in the show they did because of obviously his,
right in
his
the show
parents.
Yes, but yeah. I'm saying in DC Comics in the history,
yeah.
I know that Flash's dad or mom dies. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything beyond that. I don't know if his dad is convicted of the crime.
As far as
I don't
I know
if he's adopted.
They're following the comics, I believe. I'm not sure. I haven't read the comics lately.
I don't have a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
And the love triangle that they created with the show is mm-hmm. not a big deal.
Yeah.
Sue and Johnny are not, probably not, I'm 90% not going to fall in love with each other.
Oh, most definitely not.
Right. And when, we don't know how old Sue was when she got adopted. We don't know, technically she's supposed to be older than Johnny.
Mm-hmm. She's the older sister and he's the younger brother.
Right.
Yeah.
They could have adopted her before he was even born, thinking they couldn't have children, and then he came along.
True.
Who the hell knows?
Yeah.
Barry and Iris knew each other before they got adopted. They're
yeah,
the same age.
They were friends
yeah.
when they were small. Yeah.
So, the dynamic's different there. I mean, I like that point. I probably would have never thought of it.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting foil, like, for the Marvel side and the DC side, kind of like, you know.
Well, I remember when the Daredevil movie came out and everybody
was... There's a lot of, like, comparing between Marvel and DC. What's Marvel doing right? What's DC doing wrong or right? You know?
I remember when the Daredevil movie came out and everybody was up in arms about the Kingpin being a black man.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's kind of bollocks.
I echo your point from earlier. If he was the best man for the job, then give him the job.
I'm not gonna
hold to ceremony.
I'm gonna play it
and say I want a white guy that does
right,
a
right.
worse job.
I'm gonna play my cards on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Other than skin tone, Ving Rhames was the, in my opinion,
that wasn't Ving Rhames.
Ving Rhames. I always get him and Michael Duncan Clark mixed.
There you go.
I'm
Michael
a terrible
Clark
person.
Michael Clark Duncan, rest in peace.
Sure. Throw rocks at me later. I always do it. I've been doing it since Pulp Fiction. So,
yep.
Hate me if you're gonna hate me, but hate me because I'm stupid, not any other reason.
Yeah.
But I've been stupid consistently for 20 years.
It's not looking good, folks.
So his last name's Clark.
Michael Clark Duncan.
Okay, Duncan. Michael Duncan. Other than skin tone, he was perfect.
Yes, he was
if
perfect.
If you wanted to go, compared to the comics.
Yes.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Not compared to the comics, he's perfect, period.
Yes.
No caveats needed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine with that. Someone then later goes, well, what if Matt Murdock was black? I was like, as long as he's Catholic, it wouldn't fucking matter.
True. That's true.
Because that's more important to the character than the skin tone.
Yeah.
And so... And I think that's what bugs me about the Storms.
If it was put to me to make a Daredevil movie along like at that time frame, I would have gone like Michael Chiklis as the Kingpin or something like that.
I know who that is.
The guy from the Shield, bald guy
who ends up playing the Thing.
The Thing in the first couple Fantastic Four movies because he's a big guy. He's bald.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, that's what I would look for first off. And then if I had a guy that would do it better with a different skin tone, I would go with that.
Well, I mean, obviously you're going to have people. For years, people was like, Patrick Stewart's got to play Professor Xavier.
Yeah.
I'm sure they could find another bald white guy.
Yeah.
But they wanted that bald white guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And then now you have somebody different playing him.
All right, who's not so bald.
Oh, he's bald the next one.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
But you get what I'm saying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But what I was going to say was the thing about
you,
the...
You get a certain person in your head, and that's... If I think of Magneto, I think of X of this person.
Really?
And or something like that. That's what I'm getting from you, is like, if I think of this person, I think of Patrick Stewart. And that's the only person I'd like to see
say. That's what a lot of... I was a big fan of the Wizard magazine.
Yeah,
which talked about comics and stuff. That was always what they presented.
They had the movie casting, like, the dream cast.
And they did that, like, a decade or 5 years before the movie ever came out.
Yep.
Again, I have no problem. I think he did an amazing job. Oh, yeah. My problem with the Storms is that they went half-assed.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean?
They recast one of them, but not the other one. To me, the character of Sue and John are siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more important than their race tone.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate that, because we're all humans. I hate the word race. We're all humans.
Yeah.
But them being siblings was more important to their characters than any other aspect of them, in my opinion.
Because they'd always pick at each other.
For God's sake.
Yeah.
This science guy got his best friend, who happened to be, you know, a pilot. Mm-hmm. I think he had been a military pilot.
Yeah.
Okay. He got Ben to fly the spaceship.
Yeah.
Took his girlfriend along and his girlfriend's little brother.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yep.
Now, as the evolutions of the characters have developed since the 50s or 60s, when characters were confined by the society they were created, Sue has since been created as almost Reed's equal.
Yeah.
Okay? Sue's a scientist.
Yeah.
She's a scientist in one or two fields, while Reed's a scientist in, like, 12.
Yeah.
You know?
Reed's like a natural genius.
Yeah,
like,
it's hard like to be Reed's equal.
Yeah.
Right. And John was still her brother, his adventure-seeking, race car-driving
daredevil
brother. Right. Yeah. Johnny Storm's character was there to appeal to the teenage boy character that's reading.
Yeah.
The hotshot, pun intended.
Yeah.
Dating all the hot girls.
And the exact opposite from Sue, who was more
closed, traditional, studious. Yeah. Conservative type character.
Yep.
And it's those aspects of who they are, and that they sometimes become oil and water, or fire and ice, or whatever.
Or the thing in Johnny.
Right.
Like fighting just constantly.
But the moment they need to work together, there's no hesitation, there's no, we gotta trust one another. They are brother and sister.
They're a unit.
And I think this movie should have done that. They should have made them brother and sister. Not adopted, not step, not half.
They still might do that. They still might come together for, like, you know,
and fight. I know in the 21st century we have blended families, and a lot of people will go, well, my stepsister means just as much to me as my full sister. And, you know, rock and roll.
Yeah.
I'm not downing any of that. Just, to me, like I said, if you were going to do A, you should have gone all the way.
I heard about this movie coming up, and I heard something about Dr. Doom was a hacker or something like that along those lines.
Oh, really?
And, like, that's his claim to fame or something, and that's why he's such a bad thing. He's like a super cyber hacker or something. I don't like that idea. I hope they changed it before the movie comes out. That's the one idea that kind of, like, lost me on this.
I don't know anything about that. I can tell you...
Yeah.
I can tell you the comic book history.
The comic book history is dictator, and he rules, like, a country, right? More or less?
Well, there's more to it than that, but yes. I can tell you the ultimate comic history.
Yeah.
And I can compare it to the last movie that was made.
Yeah.
Reed and Victor were schoolmates.
Yeah.
He came to America because he's that smart. He got a free ride.
From that very he was born.
Well, he was from Europe, and they never really said what country at first.
Yeah.
And if they did, it wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah.
He wants to do an experiment. Reed tells him he shouldn't because he's got his numbers wrong and it's dangerous.
Yep.
Doom does it anyways. It explodes in his face, scars him.
Yeah.
Blames Reed, gets kicked out of the school.
Yeah.
Goes on a walkabout around the world trying to find a way to heal his face.
Mm-hmm.
Ends up meeting mystical monks in Himalayans.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they teach him magic and make his armor, or they make his armor, and in his hubris and, you know, don't use that yet, my lord. It's still hot. I'll tell you when it's hot. He puts it on his face and makes the scars worse. It burns.
Yeah.
Okay. That's when he goes back to Latveria. And
I think then
he takes back over the country.
The armor's pretty much permanent at that point. He never takes it off.
Well, he can, but yes.
Yes.
You don't see him without it is the point.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't realize this. Doom has magic.
Mm.
And he melds his mystic and his his science together.
Yeah.
He's doing things in the Marvel comics that smarter people aren't doing.
Mm-hmm.
Time travel.
Yeah.
Doom is considered one of the greatest robotics.
Yeah. Because he makes Doom clones all over the
place. Yeah, Doom clones, Doom bots.
Yeah.
He has a lot of abilities.
Yeah.
He is Reed's equal.
Yeah, in mentally, intelligence.
Yes. Now, in the Ultimates comics, there's like a think tank that Reed's a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Storm is one of the... He's either the guy running it, or he's one of the adults in charge of it.
Mm-hmm.
His daughter is a genius biologist, Sue.
Uh-huh.
And so she's in the think tank. It's kind of hinted that maybe she wouldn't been if her dad wasn't there.
Yeah.
She kind of walks around with that chip on her shoulder, I gotta prove myself.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny's there because his dad lives there, and he likes to make fun of the nerds. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when Reed creates a teleporting device,
mm-hmm.
he's going to do this great big demonstration, and he invites his football high school friend, the mm-hmm. one who protected him when they were in high school, kept him getting beat up, Ben, yeah. Because,
yeah.
I mean, Reed's, like, much younger than Ben.
Yeah.
He's, like, you know, 12 or 13 and about to graduate from high school.
Uh-huh. And Ben's
is 17, about to graduate from high school.
Yeah.
And then they go to college together or some shit. I could be wrong about that part. Anyhow, when that happens, instead of a rocket ship in space getting bombed by cosmic rays, they get teleported through the negative zone and spread out in the world. Ben becomes Rocky.
Mm-hmm.
John becomes Fire.
Mm-hmm.
Sue is invisible like air. Mm-hmm. And Reed, he doesn't teleport away. He's left there on the platform, melted like water.
Yeah.
It kind of made this whole reference of the four elements with him.
Oh, interesting.
And it was Doom who changed the coding in the machinery.
To do that to them.
Yeah. Because of jealousy bullshit.
Yeah.
And I don't remember exactly what happened. I think he actually gets affected by it too, and that's why in the movie he has electric powers.
Yeah.
Because in the Ultimates he has electric powers.
Oh, okay. Cool.
But he does use his scientific hacking / robotics / I'm Dr. Doom.
Yeah.
I mean, I won't say he becomes the exact same comic as the character as the regular comics does.
Mm-hmm.
But it's close.
Cool.
So, I'm not as hyped about Fantastic Four as I am about Ant-Man, but I would give it a go.
Yeah.
Definitely would give it a go.
I'd like to see the reviews of it first. I mean, I'd like to... I'll still give it a go, but I want to see, like, the Rotten Tomatoes reviews. All right,
now it's your turn. Star Wars 7.
I'm interested to see it. I'd like to know what storyline they went with it. I don't believe they went with Timothy Zahn's continuation, because Timothy Zahn wrote some books called, like, Empire Rising and stuff like that, that actually had books that went past Return of the Jedi. And, so I'm anxious to see what they do with it. I haven't seen a whole lot about it, but I've seen some of the newer characters and stuff like that. We've got Sith, we've got Jedi.
Considering that Disney said, hey, every bit of the expanded universe is now kaputsky.
Yeah. So they're probably not going to go with Timothy Zahn's storyline, so they're going to bring something all their own to it. I'm excited to see it. I'm wondering what they're going to do with it, you know?
See, I have to admit, Star Wars...
I like the fact that Lucas is not really writing it. I think Lucas has, like, he can submit ideas, and then Disney will say yay or nay. But I think who's
Abrams?
Directing? Abrams is, yeah, J.J. Abrams. Yeah, and he's like, if I want to, I can kill Jar Jar in, like, the first 10 minutes of it or something like that, if I so choose to make the fans happy. Because, I mean, J.J. Abrams does a good job with things. You've seen him in Alias, and, well, I think
I saw the Star Trek reboot that he did, and it was done well.
Very well. Did you see
the first one was done really good, and the second one was passable.
Yeah.
And my only problem with the second one is it's Wrath of Khan.
Pretty much, yeah.
It's Star Trek Wrath of Khan.
It's Wrath of Khan retooled for a new audience.
With a bit of a twist, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I went and watched it with Drew, and Drew's like, I didn't even watch the TV shows, and I knew what was going on because I've seen the movies.
Yeah.
He goes, I haven't seen the movies since I was a kid with my dad. And I knew what was going on.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, you're right.
But, you know, Shaun of the Dead's writing the new one.
Simon Pegg?
Simon Pegg is one of the writers on Star Trek
3. Mm-hmm. Good deal.
Yep.
The reboots are okay. The Star Wars.
Star Wars.
Okay, Star Wars. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to fanboy for...
I'm going to watch it, obviously.
I'm going to fanboy. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go because it's Star Wars.
Yeah.
Now, I have an equal mental awareness that it could be a train wreck,
mm-hmm.
or it could be awesome sauce.
That's true.
But the point is it will be Star Wars train wreck, or Star Wars awesome sauce.
It will be the greatest train wreck in the world, or the greatest awesome sauce in the world.
So I'm on board. Just like Star Trek. When Star Trek got the reboot,
uh-huh.
it was the exact same reason I went. Yeah. I was like, this could be a Star Trek train wreck, or it could be a Star Trek awesome sauce.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was pretty good.
I liked it. I liked who they cast for everybody. I liked the storylines. I like how they play the characters and everything like that.
I'll admit, I did not walk in with high hopes.
Mm-hmm.
I was expecting the train wreck.
It's really best if you don't. If you walk in like expecting the lowest, you'll usually get surprised, and then that makes the movie so much better.
Okay, so
because if you walk in there with high hopes and saying, I want them to hit this bar up here, sometimes, I mean, you're going to look for stuff to bitch about.
I am a big Star Trek fan,
mm-hmm.
so I'm going to go ahead and pose to you. Of the characters in the first movie, which one was your favorite? And why?
I like the character of Kirk.
You like?
I like Kirk.
Pines.
Chris Pine's Kirk. I like that he's a screw up, and he's not the best. He's not the highest marks like student in the world, but he goes with his gut instinct and usually comes out on top.
Oh, I don't know.
But he gets by with the help from his friends.
Yes.
He's not doing this all by himself.
Right.
He's got the support squad behind him. To be like, no, that's a bad idea, Jim. You shouldn't do that.
Remember that Kirk mm-hmm. went into the academy
mm-hmm.
while being a delinquent.
Yep.
And he told
Pike.
Pike. He mm-hmm. told Pike, 4 years, I'll do it in three. And he did.
Yeah.
And that keeps to the traditional stories of Kirk.
Yeah.
Kirk wasn't a delinquent. He was, I'm Starfleet through and through. I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
And then, he flew through his courses. He was exceptional.
Yeah.
Now, realize he was exceptional in command track, not an exceptional engineer. He wasn't any of that jazz.
He doesn't excel in one field, I guess. I mean, commanding,
right.
I guess.
Right.
But other than that,
and
not
in the
really.
Original series, Kirk does say in one of the episodes, I don't know which one, I guess I might slip a little bit on my nerd cred, but he does mm-hmm. say to someone, I'm the most disposable person in the crew.
Mm-hmm.
This ship will exist and run without me. I can't fix the engines.
That's
I
true.
Can't heal anybody like a doctor.
Yep.
I am the most disposable. I'm the least needed person.
Yep. But he is the glue that keeps everybody together. He
yes.
gets them all together as a unit, as a family, you'd say, I guess.
I mean, that's what makes a commander, taking
yeah.
all these different personality traits and abilities and getting the best out of every one of them.
Pretty much, yeah. He knows how to talk to people. He knows how to get them to do what he wants to do and get to point A to point B.
Plus, now, going with what you're saying, Chris Pine really does capture the cowboy mm-hmm. aspect of Kirk.
Yep.
That whole 1-2 punch diplomacy when needed.
Pretty much, yeah. And then he'll give his life for his crew.
He shows a bit of charm.
Mm-hmm.
His charm is different than Shatner's was.
Yeah.
So I liked it. And I liked that it was different.
Mm-hmm. He's got his demons, though.
He'll
see him in the bar, and he'll be like, oh,
he's still loving
that
the ladies,
sucked.
Too. Got a weakness for the gals.
Oh, yeah, always.
My favorite was Carl Urban's Dr. McCoy.
Oh, yeah. I loved him a lot. It was really close between him and Kirk.
The thing I loved about DeForest Kelly McCoy was when you watched Bones, you knew that medicine was what was important.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a doctor first. A doctor second, your friend third, and a Starfleet officer fourth.
Yep.
And that's the way DeForest did it.
Yeah.
Carl's to me was, I'm a doctor first, your friend second, and a Starfleet officer third.
Mm-hmm.
And a badass fourth.
Yeah, that's true. He did a lot more action, I think, than DeForest Kelly ever did.
Had a bit to do with it.
Oh, yeah.
And the willingness to expand.
And you got to think of the original Star Trek series, there's not a whole lot of budget there.
There's not a whole lot
of wiggle room. Now that we're working with millions of dollars, you can do whatever you want. You fight a guy with
karate. How awesome
karate
was it when he was
a...
all like,
yeah.
Oh, you want to get on the ship? Boom, I got this idea. This man's all...
Yeah.
This guy's allergic sick. Reaction to this and that, and I got to get back on the ship.
Pretty much.
I loved it. I loved him.
He'll bend the rules just in case.
And I liked his joke about why his nickname was Bones.
She took everything from me for my bones.
DeForest is McCoy. Now, I don't know if it was in the show or if it was in the books. Mm-hmm. I have a bad habit of getting that kind of faded, but the kind of, I'm going to go with off-the-cuff joke for McCoy was, he joined Starfleet because his wife got the whole damn planet in the divorce. Yeah, he just had to leave, you know?
Damn.
She's like, might as well got the planet in the divorce. I had to get out of there. McCoy, the thing I like most about McCoy's character, and mm-hmm. Dr. McCoy's my favorite character.
Yeah.
He's a family man.
Yeah.
He's been married. He had a divorce.
Yeah.
He's got children. He's got a daughter, mm-hmm. Joanne. And while it don't come up much in the TV show, there was plans in Star Trek 2 was going to be in the reboot of the series.
Mm-hmm.
But it ended up becoming Star Trek, the motion picture.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Joanne was going to show up as a nurse.
Oh, really? That's cool.
She was going to be the Nurse Chapel type character.
Oh, that's neat.
Was with one of the things I heard.
Yeah.
So there, I have my Star Trek nerd fix.
Cool. Good stuff. And yeah, now that it's in Simon Pegg's hands, Simon Pegg and J. Abrams are writing it.
Okay, so Pegg.
I think Pegg is an excellent writer. I like the whole Shaun of the Dead trinity. The whole, what's it called?
Is it a trilogy?
It's a trilogy.
Oh, wow. I only seen the one. And I
Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and then the World's End. It's called the Cornetto Trilogy.
Now, I've seen all those movies, but I didn't know they were supposed to be a...
They're more or less a trilogy with different characters.
Okay.
But the same two kind of heroes.
No.
They're not the same characters in all three games.
No, not at all.
All three movies. But it's the same archetypes, I guess you would say. Okay. But yeah, it's called the Cornetto Trilogy, named after a ice cream cone.
I liked Pegg.
In England.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed him in the movie.
Uh-huh. But...
His Montgomery Scott was, to me, about as far from Montgomery Scott, James Doohan's, as it could get.
Yeah.
Again, I might get stones for that.
Mm.
I'm not saying he was bad.
Uh-huh.
But to me, he was very different.
Yeah, I think, I like the way he played it. He's still a competent engineer.
Oh, yeah,
but
yeah.
He would always freak out. And that's kind of, I think that's what he took away from James Doohan doing Scotty.
Well, again, you know, James Doohan was a mechanic first,
mm-hmm.
a Starfleet officer second.
Your friend third.
Your friend third, and a mechanic fourth.
Yeah.
This guy's a mechanic, your friend, and a Starfleet officer.
I'd say mechanic friend, then mechanic, because he'll bend the rules for Kirk.
Well, he did in the second one. In the first one, he kind of just went along with the ride, but he got there halfway. Because
he gets the idea that Kirk wants the best for his crew.
Right.
The
Plus, he likes the ship. It's interesting.
The crew's safety is the number one priority for Kirk.
Well, see, in the TV show,
mm-hmm.
Montgomery Scott is third in command.
Yeah, but past him and Scott, him and Spock?
Huh?
Past him and Spock?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Kirk is first, Spock is the first officer, and chief science officer.
Yeah.
Commander Scott is the second officer and chief engineer.
Yeah.
So. That's why he was always left in charge when they beamed down, if he didn't go with them.
Yeah.
But
and he rarely ever did.
So I liked the way they did Uhura.
Mm-hmm.
Uhura's original character was limited by her time.
I never saw the Uhura Spock romance in Star Trek. Did that happen in the old show?
They
or
touched
is that new?
It. They touched it in the beginning,
uh-huh.
but it was like a thread they didn't want to pursue, so they let it go.
Well, and back in the time frame,
plus
back
it was
in the '60s. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To give you an example, in the original series, there's a scene where she's playing an instrument or he's playing an instrument, I don't remember which,
uh-huh.
and then the other one joins.
Uh-huh.
And they kind of have a bonding moment over music.
Yeah.
And that was supposed to be the idea of bringing Spock out and showing some of his human nature, and they were thinking of playing a romance, but they decided to skip it, and they gave the romance aspect to Nurse Chapel. Mm-hmm. Nurse Chapel's character was in love with Spock.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scene, there's an episode where that really comes to play. It's important.
Because they were going to take Spock's ears away because they thought he looked too much like the devil.
Yeah, that was originally.
He had the long nose and he had the pointed ears. Right. And a lot of people detested the show that said he looked too devilish or demonic.
I don't know if it's the producers or the studio people or what, but the story was always told that Roddenberry, you can have the second in command be a woman,
mm-hmm.
or you can have the alien.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I'll keep the alien, make him second in command, and marry the actress.
Nice.
So, Michelle Barrett, and then they put her in her wig and made her the Nurse Chapel.
Oh, that's
And cool. No one even knew.
That's beautiful.
She became the voice of the computer for the longest time. She was Deanna Troi's mom.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's neat.
Well,
we should probably bring it to the close if you were like not tired already.
tired of listening to us. We've covered a lot of ideas. Is there anything in the final ideas? Is there something that, you know, I want to talk about next? You?
I'm good with whatever, really. I'm fine.
So, in other words, no, you don't have anything.
I don't care.
All right. So, I think for Two Fools Podcast, we're going to call it a day and go get some raviolis.
Yeah.
Sorry. Ravioli.
Oh, okay. Just one. One to split.
Well, no. Ravioli is the plural.
Yeah.
And I don't remember. Raviolo is the single.
Oh, okay.
My daughter keeps calling them raviolis, and it drives Josh kind of bonkers. And I don't know if she does it just because it drives him bonkers.
Probably.
Or if that's just the French benefit.
Oh, nice.
So, anywho, y'all have a safe night.
Thank you for listening to us. This has been Roger.
And if you like what you've heard, give us some likes or some comments. We're going to post this on Podomatic and probably on YouTube. And don't forget to come by the Facebook page, and we'll have some links to some other stuff we do.
Can't wait to hear from you. Give us ideas of what to talk about, and we'll chat about it.
So, y'all have a safe day.